Morning.
Said that I might have to resettle you. It looks as if that time has now arrived. So all members are coming in now. Unfortunately, Susanna, we will have to vacate those seats there so that members can occupy the second block there. But for now, you can sit, but as soon as the members all come in, you will have to look for another seat to sit down. Thank you. Sorry for not giving you an eviction notice in advance.
We take this opportunity to welcome the collective of the members of the People's Portfolio Committee on Tourism. Honorable members, all of you, you are welcome. We are also welcoming the Rivercrests who are attached to the Portfolio Committee. The Rivercrests are those who help the Portfolio Committee to ensure that it's able to administratively achieve its intended strategic objectives. So it is the machinery, the administrative machinery. The reason why I like calling them Rivercrests is because everything is in the context of the revolution. So it is bureaucracy that is imbued with revolutionary thought and everything else. Perpetual motion, moving forward. That's why I characterize them as a Rivercrest. So you are welcome, honorable members. We also take this opportunity to welcome our colleagues who are from the BEE Charter Council. We have been looking forward to meet with you. We are new ourselves. We just came in June this year. So we thought we need to do necessary familiarization process, but at the same time, get into what is expected of us to execute the mandate on behalf of the people. There will be an introductions that are formal from your side. But just before we go, for honorable members, we are having two apologies here. We've got Mututuzi Mbongwe, am I pronouncing correct? Mbongwe, the Deputy Director General Deputy General Secretary of South African Commercial Catering and Allied Workers Union, SACAU. And that Duduzi is not here. I was Tandiwe Kotongwana, the non-executive director of Premier, I nearly said Premier League Hotels, Premier Hotel Group. Premier Hotel Group will not be making it to to the meeting. So we will not be able to be with us today. But otherwise, we welcome the rest of the collective from the council. And before we get into our agenda, just to make some opening remarks, firstly congratulate the box, the sperm box, for performing very, very well. You will remember, honorable members, that that mean, when you want to irritate, you want to further inflict pain and irritation when you realize that the coach of so let's not get there. We must maintain the cohesion and the decorum of the house. So the Springboks have done well. You'll remember that, I don't know, it's our last two or the last meeting, where the chair in opening the meeting spoke about why it's important from a branding perspective for some catalytic work to be done in the economy for the Springbok to do well and reach the finals, and why from a marketing branding perspective, we need to make sure that we use that opportunity to advance our strategic objective in the context of tourism. We said that. So we are there now, right? We're in the finals. So the whole world is looking at only two countries, right? It's ourselves and these others, our colonizers. Yes, our colonizers. So it must always in sequence be South Africa and them, in sequence. So the whole world will be looking at what we are going to be doing in foreign land of Japan. It's either us or is them. So from a tourism point of view, that's a huge mileage for brand South Africa. I'm sure those who are responsible for branding and giving context and content to branding, they will use that opportunity. So we congratulate them, the coach and everybody else, the players. So Sunday you will be the champions. Yeah, Saturday. So they are arriving on Sunday, somewhere there. And there must be a plan, I hope, in the sports department and the portfolio committee, they are working on post the finals program so that they can parade them throughout the country. Throughout the country, but from a tourism perspective, that's a mileage. That's a mileage for us. Now, that's the first thing we wanted to say. Of course, we congratulate those who brought tourists to Pretoria over the weekend. We just focus on tourism. Yeah. We don't focus on who did what, right, in the game, and so on. But there are tourists who were from townships, from villages, from Pixie, from wherever. Yeah, from Naturena and all other places. And they went into Tswane and brought it to a standstill. So if we were to do the numbers there, I'm sure the shops will be able to say, this were the returns. And there are no incidents which are negative, outside the score and other things. Incidents that are negative. Crime, nothing. Everything went well. Yeah. Smooth. Yeah, very peaceful. Yes, very peaceful. So that's tourism. on our part. So we congratulate those who continue to, because of their popularity, draw such big numbers to our venues. We did get an indication that you are on the way, Honorable Krambok. So you are.
I apologize, I lost my glasses, I still can't find them.
But you can see, at least.
I can see you, Chair.
Yes, thank you very much. No, you'll find them. If you don't, it's part of contribution to the economy to buy new ones. Now, South Africa is in a journey, right, to prosperity. So in the ultimate end, we want to construct a prosperous South Africa. Right? In the ultimate end, we want to disentangle our country, South Africa, from all the challenges that are related to colonialism and apartheid. So we are in transition. Right? We are in transition to constructing this South Africa that is united, democratic, non-racial, non-sexist, and prosperous. From one generation to another, we are in that journey. Now, I'm saying this because today we are going to be talking about transformation. So we must understand this transformation to be in that context, so that people shouldn't just think we are speaking English. That this transformation is about the journey that we have undertaken as South Africans after convergence in 1994, after the protracted negotiations converged through the ballot boxes in 1994 to create this new South Africa, right? And we're in a journey towards creating that South Africa. Those who are Christians, our journey is not very different from the journey of the children of Israel coming from Egypt to the Promised Land. So our Egypt is colonialism and apartheid. We are going to the Promised Land. The Promised Land is not Jerusalem. It's united, democratic, non-racial, non-sexist, and prosperous South Africa. So that's where we are getting to. And this journey is difficult. It's not simple. It's not easy. It's going to be protracted. There's going to be, along the way, emotional outbursts. There's going to be tensions. We're going to have other people saying, we think we must abandon this thing of building non-racialism. Others will say, we think this thing of trying to ensure that there is inclusivity that will help us to achieve unity is not helping us. So we must abandon it. So others will despair along the way. So we shouldn't despair. It's a protracted struggle. Now in the context of tourism, which will be saying, what is our contribution to that project? From a tourism perspective, that's what we are going to be discussing here today. And say this transformation, what impact is it making in taking us forward towards that change? Indications are that in the context of tourism, the transformation project is not moving very well, as your report shows and as your report is going to demonstrate. But it's an opportunity to say what else can be done for us to move faster. So that one day, I don't know how many generations to come, South Africans will no longer speak color. Right? One day, will no longer be speaking color. So many generations from now must just be talking about being a South African. They will no longer be talking black and white. They will no longer be speaking about transformation. Transformation will be something in the textbooks, for people to do their thesis and further research on this and that. So it's a long-term project that we are embarking upon. So as the tourism sector, in the economic terms, today we are here to say, what more strides can we make and how do we make them? The committee has agreed, the council, that what we are going to be doing for the next 5 years, we are going to be focusing on three things. One of them is transformation. So we have agreed that from September to September, so September will become a culmination during tourism month, will be a culmination of some kind of a report to the people of South Africa on the work we have done to make some strides in achieving this strategic objective to transform South Africa in the context of the tourism sector. The second thing we are going to be focusing on is ensuring vibrancy in tourism in the periphery of the economy of tourism. Right? Now, the periphery of the economy of tourism is your villages. The second line of that periphery is your townships. So when you look at poverty in South Africa, that is where it's expressed the most, right? Villages and townships. That's why you've got most of your problems, your troubles in South Africa. So we want to do that, but also ensure that we deal with the issues of townships, tourism in the town. I mean, in the townships and small dorpies, the small towns. So it's your village, your township, and your small towns, your small dorpies. The third thing is general oversight on the executive on how we are spending our money and so on. So to strengthen this work, we are going to be establishing community-based oversight, tourism oversight forums to drive us, to help us achieve our strategic objective. So I thought you must understand the broad thrust of our approach and what we are going to be focusing on for the next 5 years. So in the next 5 years, these are our three areas of performance, the three. It's massive. Transformation alone is huge. But we thank you that you came for us to familiarize ourselves with one another today here, and for us to emerge with some concrete. It's not going to be an easy discussion, this transformation matter, but I'm sure we'll emerge with a way forward that will be able to drive us towards our strategic goal. So we shouldn't be digressed by other things. We must remain focused on what is it that we want to achieve as a country in the context of the tourism sector, in the context of the tourism sector. So I just thought I need to make those opening remarks, because the preamble of the Constitution says we must deal with injustices of the past. So there's already a judgment in the Constitution that there was injustice, and that we must deal with injustices of our past. It's in the preamble of the Constitution. So it's how we act responsibly to deal with these injustices of our past, and not be selfish and think that everything must happen in our lifetime and for our lifetime as for ourselves. We are doing it for future generations. They are the ones who are going to benefit from everything else that we are going to be doing in the context of transformacy. It's transformacy in Africa.
100%.
Transformacy.
Yeah.
Transformacy in Africa. Now.
You don't have leaders, so they must ask us.
Transformacy. Now, Mr. Boltino, I was looking for a quote here in this book, but we'll get to the quote. The Mr. Kronborg, you have an issue.
Not at all, Chair. It was a backhanded compliment that you have to ask someone from the ANC to translate into Afrikaans, but not the white DA. Quite remarkable. Your transformation project is proceeding faster than your advisor.
We're
multiracial.
But you can't African friend. You can't? Can you African friend? Oh,
same
for Africa. Oh, so what is transformation in Africa?
Transformation, like you
said. Oh, that's it. Yeah, settled. Transformation. On Khan 4 and 2. Some work, some track.
Yeah.
Okay. We are now going to be getting into the briefing by the Charter Council on this important subject, which I spoke about, which, if not properly handled, can polarize our society. But we don't want polarization. We want convergence, not polarization. So we are going to hand over to both, I nearly said the department, we are going to hand over to the council to do the introductions and then do the presentation. Naji S.O.R. Maumapi, the chair of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism, is Honorable Kahalo, member of the committee, is also the president of the AIC. He is the only person responsible for the popularity of an area called Matatiel. And then next to him there is our whip in the study group of the African National Congress, the member of this committee, Honorable Machel, we call her chief chair. She's from the African National Congress. Next to her is Honorable Peter. Honorable Machel is from the Mpumalanga province. Honorable Peter is from Eastern Cape, the province of creativity. That's where he comes from the Eastern Cape, in abundance. And then Rinalinda Temieni. Temieni is from KZN. Why did I think you're from Gauteng? He's from KZN.
Always with me.
From the African National Congress, himself and Honorable Peter are from the ANC. Then we have Honorable T.S. Teko, who also comes from the province of creativity and abundance in the Eastern Cape.
Yeah, yeah.
Honorable Teko. We have Honorable Muteka, who is from, by origin, from the province that knows how to bring about rain, but later migrated to Gauteng because of the economic situation in this country. So he is there now. His party is Economic Freedom Fighters. That's his party. And then we have Honorable April.
Yes, Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable April is from the African National Congress. He's from Gauteng in Ikorleni. Next to him is also a member of this committee from the ANC, Honorable Kumba. We call her Kumba Kumba. In the committee here, you'll know what Kumba Kumba is. That's Honorable Kumba. She's from Gauteng. And next to Honorable Kumba is Honorable Kumbi. So it's Kumba and Kumbi. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yes. Honorable Kumbi is a member of this committee, the youngest. In this committee, the most vibrant. We call him our hooker in tourism. Our hooker in tourism. He is from the Democratic Alliance. He comes from the province of KwaZulu-Natal. That's where he comes from. And next to him, we've got Honorable Krambok, who is one of the veterans of this committee.
Honorable Krambok is from the Democratic Alliance. He also comes from the province of KwaZulu-Natal. So that is the collective of, I'm from the People's Province of the Northwest, Bukoni Bupiri, Maike, the capital city, from a tiny village called Manamulela, not Malamulela. Manamulela, that's where I am from, yeah. That's where I'm from. We don't theorize poverty. We don't read about it, so that's for another day. We have lived poverty, we know poverty. So I'm from there, and then I find myself on this chair here because of the African National Congress, which then decided that Sogneji responsibility of being in front of people and talking. That's what the ANC gave to me as a responsibility to manage the thinking process, how those thinking processes in the committee are manifested through talking in the meeting. That responsibility is called chairperson. So that's what I'm doing here as the chair. We are now going to give over to you, the council, to introduce yourself. And feel free and relax. Relax here in the committee. We'll give you an opportunity to introduce and immediately do the presentation. Over to you.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. And thank you for the warm welcome that we've received here this morning, and good morning to all the Portfolio Committee members. I will introduce myself, and then I thought it would be useful to let the council members introduce themselves and just a brief, you know, where they come from in their introduction. It allows you then to see the type of experience and skills and diversity of the actual council that is sitting before you. Honorable Chairperson, in the apologies, I would like to also add that Me Khapilwe Silo is also unavailable and sends her apologies. She is with South African National Parks, if you look at our list. So my name is Lindiwe Sangwenisido. I am the chairperson of the, I nearly said of the Portfolio Committee. My aspiration. I am the chairperson of the BBBE Tourism Charter Council, and I'm here today with my colleagues. I was most appreciative when I saw who had accompanied us. I think it's wonderful that people who have working day jobs take this topic of transformation so seriously, and have felt very honored to come and meet with yourselves and are present. So I hope you are as appreciative as I am of their company. And while I will be giving the main presentation later on towards the end, after the presentation, when it's time for Q&A, we will also allow and engage with the other members of the council. I work with the City Lodge Hotel Group as the Chief Operating Officer. I'm a hotelier by profession and have been in the hotel industry for over 30 years. To my left.
Thank you, Chair. And good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Jerry Mabena. I serve as the Deputy Chair to Sis Lindiwe. And I work for an organization called Teve Tourism Group, which is a 100% owned subsidiary of a company called Teve Investment Corporation, which is a company that was founded by the aspirations of our leaders, such as Nelson Mandela, back in the day when I was a little boy. So it's an honor and a privilege for me to be driving the agenda of transformation, Mr. Chair. Look forward to engaging with you.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. My name is Blake Komani. I'm the Deputy CEO of Tovest Group, which is a group that is majority black-owned. And I'm also the the chairman of the Tourism Business Council from Eastern Cape, the province that was mentioned by the chairman. But, Chair, you know, you mentioned something about rugby. I thought I wouldn't let that go without commenting, because I was in Tokyo when we played against Japan. You know, people mustn't underestimate the value of that and how Japanese have embraced South Africa. And they'll support South Africa throughout, and that's important for our boys on the ground.
Wow.
Japan is such a great host. Even after losing to South Africa, they were taking selfies with us. But the thing that was critical for me was to look at the demographics of South Africans who are there supporting the box. Black, white, women, didn't matter. You know, this notion that rugby is for whites, it's a... Many black people, and I know this because our company owns 50% of SA Rugby. So we are the company that was responsible for bringing people to Japan. And it was a mix, grouping of people who are behind our boys to make sure that they succeed.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Murongwa Ranpili. I'm the DVD for Tourism Sector Support Services in the department, but as well as a member for the Charter Council.
That's my friend.
Yes.
good morning, Chairperson, and good morning, honorable members. My name is Bernard Mbenga. I am a research professor, history and politics, on the Mafeking campus of Northwest University since September 87.
Wow.
And I've published quite a number of books on African history, and more especially published books on the histories of the Botswana in the Northwest. Thank you, Chairperson.
Wow. Welcome.
You can see they are very happy. You can see they are very happy. Yeah, Prof is doing a popular job. You know about what happened, the discovery in Botswana. I saw it yesterday on TV. The origins of humanity. So, now it's confirmed we are all the Botswana. Okay, that was on the right channel. Okay, Prof. Okay.
Good morning, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Tourism. My name is Majaji Ramawena. I am a member of the council, and this is my second term of serving in the council. I've had previous interactions with the committee in my former capacity as the CEO of the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. But now I'm an entrepreneur. I work with the IDC with some of the work that they do in our industry. And, you know, looking forward to work with this committee on the work of this council. Thank you.
Madam Bakhayecho, Mbulastul. Chair, I was thinking, because you made a paraphrase on the Bible, you'd allow the committee to have a moment of prayer as we began, but we forgive you. My name is Nesang Maleka. I am from a township that hosts the only street where two Nobel Peace Laureates stayed, a township that hosts massive games with the biggest stadium, Soweto. I am the youngest member officially in the council, but I am no hooker. I am just the youngest one. I am from the South African Youth in Travel, Tourism and Hospitality. In my activist personality and in my private side, I run a tour operator company called Mzansi Tourism Experience.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Bunny Bula. I am, which I believe, from the Center of the Universe for Democracy, Peter Maritzburg, which basically lays claim to Gandhi and Mandela. And we are a group of tourism entrepreneurs that work with the community in basically fulfilling the dreams of rural tourism. Thank you.
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Jeff Rosenberg. I was 43 years in hotel operations, and I guess if my colleague is the youngest member of the council, I must probably be vying with the prof for the oldest. since leaving my previous employer in direct hotel operations, I did a bit of consulting and a bit of liaising with the industry. I then started a job with the Forbes Travel Guide, which is an American-based company that verifies luxury hospitality around the world, and it's my honor to drive that footprint into sub-Saharan Africa. I'm also the chairperson of FedHASA, which is the Federated Hospitality Association of South Africa, both in the Cape and nationally. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. It's nice to be back here. My name is Ravi. My daytime job is the Chief Operating Officer at Sohosan. I'm also the Interim Chair of the South African Board of South African Tourism, and Blackie is not going to forgive me because I did forget it the last time. I'm also the Deputy Chair at the Tourism Business Council. Otherwise, he's going to get very upset at me. It's good to be back here, and I'm also, this is my second sitting on the Charter Council, and I'm very proud to be on it for the good work that it does in our industry.
Thanks for the introductions, Honorable De Freitas, you are welcome. We did get an indication that you're on your way. Yeah. Honorable De Freitas, honorable members, and the council is from the Democratic Alliance. He comes from the province of everything, Gauteng. Yes, that's where he comes from. So you can see people from rural provinces here. It's myself, Honorable Carlo, Honorable Chief Chair, Honorable Peters, Honorable Manny, T.S., Matek. Double party. So the rural is a majority. So if we take away party lines and we go on rural and urban, we are a majority, Honorable Carl, President. We are a majority. So it means everything we do must demonstrate good immaturity from where. Okay. We are now giving over to you, my sister, to do the presentation.
Thank you.
Members, I need to have read the presentation. We have gone through the presentation.
We have.
So you can present with the knowledge that it was given to us, and we are familiar with the presentation. We've got two apologies, Honorable Khalipa. Honorable Khalipa, there are some flight problems from Free State. And then we have Honorable Sithole, Wabastole, went to the other committee of transport. He's also serving there. Wabastole, the council is from the IFP, Inkatha Freedom Party. Then Honorable Khalipa, who is not here, is from the African National Congress. He's from the province called Hak Free State. That's where he comes from.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. And thank you very much for your introduction. I think, Honourable Chair, it's very useful for you to have given us your broad objectives, the three top objectives that you have presented, your reporting that you'd like us to see from September to September. We were there in Howick when you addressed us on the World Tourism Day. And I think it was very, very appropriate that we were in a place like Howick, in a rural area, if we want to be quite direct, that's what it is, but also in a significant historical place where Nelson Mandela was captured in 1962, which now is, you know, proclaimed a museum and allows us to go back and revisit the story of the liberation. Miss Bunny Bula has spoken about the work she does, and during that time when we were in Howick, we also saw the inclusion of youth and the inclusion of individuals in, you know, rural areas and how they can participate. She has a tour company that has been operating for many years, selling the freedom route and selling the story of Mahatma Gandhi and our Honorable President Nelson Mandela, our father, Madiba. So it's very apt, I think, that you should be giving us the war cry, that our reporting in terms of our work and what we've achieved will take place from September to September. We note that. And we will continue to also, I think, spread the good word in the rest of the tourism bodies that we sit with. You've heard some of the colleagues are with the Tourism Business Council of South Africa. Some of us are sitting on South African tourism and many other tourism bodies, so that we begin to align all our efforts and take heed of your war cry. I do agree, and we all agree, and we talk a lot about the inclusion of those who are forgotten, those who are in all the rural areas that all of us emanate from one way or the other. We may be living in townships or in the suburbs these days, but we all have a story. We all can point to where our umbilical cords are, and that's usually in the most forgotten parts of our country, in the rural areas. How do we bring them in? And this is a conversation that we are having. We don't have all the answers, but we certainly are very much aware and conscious of this inclusion. Yesterday, some of the members of the council, led by Mr. Manche, Matibela Manche, who is from the department sitting on my right, went into Kukuletu. They had been here about a month ago for a presentation of the alignment of the BEE code from DTI to tourism. And later on, the feedback we got was that the disabled members of the tourism sector from Kukuletu were up in arms, saying they had been excluded and not provided for in terms of access, transport, and information. So we came back and we took advantage of our presence yesterday to go and address it. But I'm making that point to say, I think time and time again we will find that there are many sectors of our tourism industry who feel excluded, who feel that they are really not being given the platform. And so we are very cognizant of that. And certainly all the points that you have brought about are ones that we hope when we finish with our discussions today, we will find some, and I'm very sure of this, we will find some common ground in terms of where we converge and how we also take your guidance and the direction with which you see us driving the tourism sector in South Africa. We know what the tourism sector can do for us from the point of its contribution to the GDP. We know what tourism can do for us from the point of job creation. With our big crisis of unemployment today, we all are trying very hard to, in spite of all the economic challenges that face us, make this sector really vibrant and really be the one that is going to unlock a lot of opportunities for unemployed youth and unemployed individuals in our workforce. If I refer to the presentation now, there are parts where, because you have honored us with reading it before we came, that I will advise as I go through the presentation that I might go through more quickly and try and get us to a point where I believe are the discussion points that are pertinent to what you'd like to engage us on. Today's purpose is really to get us to brief you on what is the current state of transformation in the tourism sector. This is guided by reports and research that has been done on our behalf that we commissioned together with the National Department of Tourism. And so it is in these findings that we're able to navigate and find exactly what areas need to be addressed. We'll also be giving you an overview of what the previous portfolio committee achieved between 2016 and 2019. Why will we do that? We try very hard from council to council, this being the fourth sitting of new council members. We try very much to make sure that there's a momentum from council to council and that we are not repetitive, but we are continuing on this journey, which you spoke about at the beginning, because we also recognize that we are on a journey, and we hope one day we won't have to be convening about transformation, as you say, Honorable Chair, because we will have achieved everything. So by going back to what the work of the previous council did, we'll be able to, you know, sort of tie and join the dots with what we, this new council that was appointed earlier this year, February onwards, is going to be looking for. So this current council facing you, were appointed early in the year by the Minister of Tourism in February 2019, and we'll be here for 3 years. Some of us did come from the previous council. This is my third sitting. Ravi Nadison, who introduced himself, was on the previous council, as was Mayor Machachi, Ramawela, and Blackie, Mr. Blackie Koman. We've all been in the previous council, hopefully adding value from where we left off. We also then want to highlight what some of the key achievements were in terms of the work outlined by the council, and then we would like to then move forward and give you our recommendations as the incoming council as to how we believe our work should be carved out. Besides the individuals that you see sitting here, we meet on a quarterly basis. We are also driven by the work of committees, subcommittees. And in the past, what we used to do was we used to have subcommittees that were aligned to the elements of the tourism scorecard, that is, you know, management control, ownership, skills development, enterprise and supplier development, and social economic development, SED. And so much of the work that was done by the committees was driven by that. This year, in this new sitting of this council, we've decided to look at it differently. We looked at where the gaps were and where the challenges were, and we said, let those subcommittees be formulated according and constituted according to where the requirements are, shown by the research, given to us in feedback by the people on the ground. And so those subcommittees look at enterprise and supplier development and procurement, which is one of the areas that is really lacking in terms of development and progress. The other committee is on funding, because time and time again we hear stories on the ground of great ideas that can't come to fruition because of lack of access to funding. So we want to look at that and really be very robust and vigorous in terms of what it is that needs to be done in that regard. The other subcommittee is on HRD, human resource development and skills development, because many times again, a lot of businesses don't fly or don't take off the ground because of lack of capacity, lack of skills, lack of ability to move the business forward. Our fourth subcommittee is called Special Projects and Communication. Special projects where from time to time we will identify urgent and very necessary aspects of our tourism transformation requirements. Currently, what that Special Projects Committee is looking at is institutionalization of the council. In our last meeting with the Portfolio Committee, your predecessors, they really asked that the next time we meet, we should be coming back to report on the institutionalization and the independency of the council. So that fourth subcommittee looks at that, as well as communication. Because we've been also given feedback time and time again that we are silent. Nobody knows what we're doing out there. The sector doesn't hear us. all aspects of, you know, government, individuals, and so on, are just feeling that stakeholders are feeling that we are not really communicating our work, and we are not felt, and our presence is not felt. So the fourth committee will be looking at that. So those are the subcommittees. And what we want to do also in these subcommittees is, besides the individuals who are the council members, we would like to also co-opt subcommittee members from our provinces. We would like to co-opt subcommittee members from especially demarginalized and previously disadvantaged groupings, so that we begin to see representation of individuals who come from peri-urban areas, townships, individuals coming with a voice from the rural areas, individuals coming with the voice of women, the voice of youth, the voice of the disabled. How will we do this? We will use technology, because we also are aware that it's not easy just to be flying people in and out to come for subcommittee meetings. So when those quarterly subcommittees meetings do take place, we will also advance ourselves and launch ourselves into the fourth industrial revolution and use Skype and Woma Zoom and what webinars, etc., to communicate with those individuals who will be co-opted into the subcommittees. Still moving on, so I've given you what our purpose is. I think it's useful to just give a little bit of the background. I hope I am speaking loud enough for everyone to hear me. Give a background on just some of the milestones. They are in your presentation, but it's just useful to set the backdrop that we started in 2003, and that was really where the Triple BEE Act number 53 was enacted. And this was part of the legislative framework. And this was really, as we all know, to promote Triple BEE and to promote inclusivity of previously disadvantaged black players. 2005 was when the Tourism Charter was signed, and then the first Charter Council was appointed by the minister who was in place at that time. In 2009, the Triple BEE Tourism Triple BEE Charter was gazetted as a Section 9.1 code under the Triple BEE Act. The Council continued its work, and one of the things that the Council did was to conduct a baseline study to get an understanding of where we were in terms of the landscape of transformation. And this also then gave guidance to what focus was needed. New members of the council in 2012 were appointed, and they continued with the work. One of the main things was amendments of the DTI in 2013 that had to be aligned to support the generic BEE codes of good practice and to strengthen transformation agenda. So we had to take a look at what DTI was guiding us to do, and that as tourism, how would we then go about ensuring that we were aligned. In 2015, the amended Tourism Triple BEE Sector Code was gazetted for implementation, and this was in order to bind all stakeholders who were operating in the tourism sector. And whenever these events took place, we conducted road shows to go to every province and to make sure that all players in the tourism sector were aware of what was going on. In 2016, another baseline study was commissioned, and this was to see, had there been any movement from the beginning, from when we started? And I must say, it is always, you know, the glass is always half full, we want to say, but it is disappointing when we do get the results, because we bemoan the fact that transformation is slow. Transformation is not happening at the pace that we would like to. But we don't give up. I think it just pushes us to focus even more. In 2018, we had a comparative analysis that was conducted to determine again the state of compliance. And compliance, I think, is something that later on in our discussion, Honorable Chair, that we should talk about. We really think that as a body that is put out there to monitor and evaluate transformation, there has to be a platform where we recognize work, good work that is done, and proper compliance, but also where consequences have to be implemented. And I think this is one area that we can say quite openly, we might come across as a body with no teeth, you know. How do we make sure that we hold the players of the industry accountable, and that when they are not complying, that there is some measure of consequence? And this is something that we are discussing and would like to also get your views on. In 2019, as I've mentioned earlier, this new council was appointed by Minister Kubane, and she has appointed myself as the chairperson, and we have, as a council, appointed Mr. Jerry Mabena as our deputy chair. Many of the members participate in all the subcommittees, and there are also chairpersons for each of the subcommittees that are present here with us today. Our mandate as a charter council is quite straightforward, and we try to keep it as simple as it as we can. But really, our job is to provide guidance on sector-specific matters that refer and are affecting BBBE in our sector. Ours is also to, from time to time, conduct studies, compile reports, so that we can sort of take a reading of what the pulse is, where we can find out what the status is of all the work that the sector is implementing and where we are failing and lacking. Other mandate is to share this information and to make sure that information of the council is disseminated in all aspects of our sector, sector members, Minister of Tourism, yourself as the portfolio committee, any of the accredited agencies who do accreditation of BEE, the Commission for BBBE in the Presidential Advisory Council, and also the Minister of Trade and Industry, as well as Parliament and the general public. So we have those as our broad sort of elements of our mandate. Let me take you to the first part of the presentation where we talk about the key achievements and the recommendations by the previous council to this new council. So we highlight here from 2016 to 2019 what some of the achievements were of that previous council. In terms of reporting and accountability, the council, as I mentioned much earlier on, did come and present to the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee, and this took place on two occasions, in June 2017, as well as in August 2018. I think it was in the August 2018 meeting where we were really told that one of the things that needed to happen was for the institutionalization of this council, and we will report back on that later on in the presentation. During its time, between 2016 and 2019, the council was able to develop a constitution. That constitution has been adopted and is now effective. We also, in October 2017, hosted a tourism roundtable as well as a tourism transformation summit. And this was where we were able to engage the people on the ground, the players in the tourism sector. Again, Honourable Chairperson, I think going forward we need to really ask ourselves where these roundtables should be taking place, where these summits should be taking place, because what often happens is they take place in the City of Gold or somewhere in Gauteng, and then, you know, the usual suspects, if I can put it that way, are the ones who are served in those forums, whereas really the voices of people who are in other provinces or maybe in, as we've already alluded, in the villages, in the townships in other parts of our country may not be getting the value. So we need to rethink going forward how we will be addressing the process of roundtables and roadshows and summits. We also undertook a research, or that council also undertook a research of the state of transformation in the tourism sector, and a lot of it is what has lent to giving us guidance in our work not only in the past council but also going forward in our recommendations. Together with the National Department of Tourism, we have embarked on building a triple BEE portal. So what often happens is, this is work in progress, it's not yet complete, but when it does come into effect, it means that any entity that needs to be listed onto this database for procurement purposes, for providing supplying you with a service or with a facility or whatever it is that you believe, and I'll give examples. You might be in the construction company and you want to know, you want to be listed so that big companies that are refurbishing or renovating or building, if looking for a black transformed player in the construction sector, will be able to find you on this portal. You might be a B&B provider, you might be a shuttle provider, you might be an upholsterer, you might be somebody who is sewing curtains for hotels or providing lights like we see in this room. So the point is, whenever some of the bigger entities are asked, who is in your supply chain? Who are you procuring from? The answer usually is, we don't know where to go. We don't know where these individuals are. So it was on this basis that the National Department of Tourism, as well as the BEE Council, felt that it was important then to put a portal together so that we can then circumvent the excuse of not knowing where to go. So we hope that we will be finished very soon, because we have been working on this for some time, and it is, as I said, work in progress. The previous council developed the transformation strategy that was to transform the sector beyond the targets that were set in the gazetted BEE code. This report was presented, there was a report presented called The State of Tourism, the State of Transformation, and this was presented to the Tourism Leadership Forum, particularly the TBCSA, the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, which Blacky Komani is the chair, and other stakeholders. Because again, these reports are driven by industry players, and so when we give them the reports, it's also for them and to take and to use in their own environment. We believe we raised some awareness. We believe it could be better, but roadshows were conducted, and there were visits to all 9 provinces by the previous council. What did that council do? There were 2 main actions, and they come in 2 blocks. Under the first action, if we look at what the council, the previous council did, action 1 was really in ensuring effective monitoring and compliance with triple BEE codes. And this entails conducting regular studies, as I've mentioned, of what is the state of transformation. And some of the challenges that were then identified in that study, if we get straight into it, was that there was lack of marketing of new businesses and existing SMEs and entrepreneurs. So finding of channeling, market channels and access to markets is something that continues to be a real big struggle for small businesses. Many of staff members who come into businesses in all parts of the tourism sector also demonstrate a lack of skills, sometimes even a lack of drive and interest in the sector. You know, our sector is an easy access sector, and sometimes a mistake that's made by individuals who want to join the sector, especially younger individuals, learners or youth coming straight out of school or unemployed youth, is to look at it as a fallback as opposed to an industry where they should be passionate and be in love with what they do. You know, I say with pride, I'm a hotelier. I studied hotel management, not medicine. My father wanted me to study medicine. I wanted hotel management. But it comes with its pain and, you know, hard work as any industry. So we sometimes feel that, how do we then get the youngsters? And maybe we should be getting them at tertiary. Maybe we should be getting them while they're still in school to start understanding what the sector is about, so that by the time they join us, they have that drive, they have that passion, they know which areas they should be studying. We were also finding challenges in inadequate awareness, as I've mentioned, and all the opportunities that are offered by the sector. I think many times we hear the traditional areas of participation are in B&Bs, shuttle drivers, tour operators, and I'm not saying that this is not needed or catering, but there's far much more on the value chain of the tourism sector that other that we could see emergence of players. You know, I keep making examples. If you go into a hotel room, or even if we just sit in this room, if this was a hotel boardroom or conference room, we'd be saying, who put those curtains up? Who was the supplier of those curtains? Who sold you those LED lights that are in the ceiling? Who provides the IT and the audiovisual services of this room? Is it a black company?
No.
Who put the carpets, etc.? So we need to start really exploring the value chain of the tourism sector so that we really get better participation. Definitely inadequate financial support. Many times people are who are wanting to be players and have great ideas are just struggling to get that financial support. Even the development banks themselves will ask, what is your skin in the game? What are you contributing? And you're talking to previously disadvantaged individuals who just don't even have collateral to start with. How does that participation take place? And we think maybe there's an opportunity here to just think out of the box and be different. There will be times where we need to provide grants. And maybe one of my colleagues called it the NASFAS model, where we say, we'll give you the money now, and when you're successful, you must pay it forward. You must bring in another. So we need to be, and we hope that the subcommittee that will be working on funding will be looking at how we can really make financial support much more accessible. We found a lack of, in the previous council, we found a lack of partnership, lack of collaboration, lack of willingness and trust between entrepreneurs and enterprises and key stakeholders to promote procurement opportunities for SMEs and entrepreneurs. Being in a large corporate, I know exactly what this is all about, where you have big entities that have had a lifetime of 30-plus years of existence in the industry and have built relationships with service providers who are white companies. Let me give examples. If you're a hotel, you have to buy your food supplies from somewhere. And this is usually from big entities who would provide anything from bread to milk to eggs, you name it. You might need carpets. Again, you'll go to your traditional white-owned carpet provider. You might need chemicals, cleaning chemicals. Again, you'll go to your typically white-owned company because the relationships were formed many years ago, and therefore there's a reluctance to let go of these. So we need to now find a way of building this collaboration, making the bigger players understand the role that they can play and how they can assist in allowing entry of some of the smaller businesses. There are some companies that are doing a good job, and that's what should be showcased so that we can then also learn from those examples. I won't give names of the companies because I might be promoting myself. or some of the members on this council. The other challenge was the lack of innovation infrastructure or innovative infrastructure and support for business operations. And just being innovative, you know, at the end we're going to say one of the things that we want to look for is just innovation, just the disruptors. Where are the young people like Naseng, our youngest player on this council? Where are they, and what are the ideas out there, and how can we make sure that we, you know, fast-track them to the front and let their ideas come through so they can be disruptive like the Ubers, disruptive like the Airbnbs, disruptive like some of the big players we hear about in the rest of the world. I'm also going to add, even though it's not a bullet point in terms of what some of the findings were, we also found that time and time again, when you speak to the small players, they also talk about lack of support from government. There is an expectation from players on the ground that government can play a bigger role. And sometimes it's very broad. When you ask what government can do, they will talk about skills development, capacity building, access to funding. But many players also bemoan the fact of when government is a client, in one form or the other, be it for a transport provision or for accommodation, the payment process is very slow. We can cite examples of businesses that have shut down. Each one of us here can tell you of businesses we know that have shut down because government didn't pay on time. And this, I think, is an indictment on government in terms of what is promoted by government, but also, sadly, because of processes, killed. And I think when we start talking about what those challenges are, we'll find that it might be legislative requirements, the PFMA. I'll give an example. I am a self-declared business person, and I've declared it to my company. I run a hotel in Soweto, the Soweto Hotel and Conference Center. And I can cite an example. I'm a shareholder, so we have management on the ground. I can cite an example of a government entity that came at the end of August for an event that was of 250 people, gave a purchase order, promised to pay it in 7 days, but only paid it last week.
No.
2 months later. So it means that that business is bankrolling the event on behalf of government, using their hard-earned cash, sometimes even borrowing money to pay salaries because that money wasn't there. That's one example. There are many other examples. And we really need to address this. It needs to be addressed because it is hurting a lot of small players who are relying on government as a supplier or as a client. I've talked about the value chain in terms of lacking of innovation. So when we saw all of these aspects in that particular sitting of the council, the previous council, we then had particular responses to these findings of this study. We decided that we would focus on key areas, and there were four key areas that we looked at. And those four key areas were access to funding, procurement and market access, innovation training and skills development, and focused monitoring and autonomy. So let me talk about access to funding. We said it was necessary to drive increased ownership in the sector, and that it would be important that this sector should establish a fund through a net profit after tax contribution from enterprise and supplier development, as well as from socio-economic development. And this was a way of funding new entrants into the market. So there is a model there that some entities are already using. There are some corporates in the industry who are using it, and again, people like Blackie Komani, Ravi Navison, and a few others of ourselves can talk to these examples where I talked about provision of food as an example, where you would find a young black-owned company that, say, for example, is growing their own vegetables and therefore supplying those vegetables to the industry. And there we don't even have to be protective. They can supply all the different hotel groups. There's no competition. The main thing is quality, the main thing is price point, and the main thing is the support that they are given. So that was one aspect. Now, usually to set up, these entities need access to funding. So it's possible that you can take your net profit after tax as a big company and give a percentage, I believe it's 3%, to supply and provide interest-free loans to these enterprises that otherwise find it difficult to get the funding from a bank or from a development institute. You can also be very soft on the terms. Sometimes you find that they need a honeymoon period. They can't pay you back in a year. Maybe they need 3 years. But what happens is you also then partner. You work closely with them so that you are providing some sort of guidance, and any areas where they are lacking, be it business skills, financial skills, access to markets, access to networks. And in that period, you gain a better understanding of the reality of when they are able to pay you back. So there are some examples out there, but we need more of those. Access to funding using existing net profit after tax contributions from successful players in the industry. Procurement and market access. government, national, provincial, and municipalities, as well as state-owned entities, can provide meaningful linkages between ESD programs, and they can also open their chain supply to allow the market to open. Right now, even in South African tourism, on which some of us sit as board members, Ravi is our interim chair, we are looking at who is going to be the lead agency for that particular South African tourism. Now, usually the lead agency would be just one entity. We now are looking at smaller agencies to support the lead agency. And why did we do that? As a state-owned entity, we wanted to make sure that the smaller players, the smaller black players, also get a chance to provide services of PR, communication, digital services, and so on. That's an example that I'm giving when we talk about opening up the markets for SMEs. There are many other examples. Under innovation, training, and skills development, we really think we are lacking as a sector when it comes to innovation. We need to find a way, and maybe we should even have an innovation summit. Maybe this is where we invite the millennials, as they are described, the next generation, the generation after us, because some of us are really, we've been in this too long, and maybe they're beginning to call us the when-we's. You know, when we did this and when we did that. The when-we's must move on, and the fourth industrial revolution must be allowed space, because we think therein we will see disruption, and therein we will see the actual innovation that is needed in this sector. We need more accreditation to accredited training so that this can be a gateway to open up for especially youth and black women. And when we talk about accredited training, we find that one of the barriers is really our engagement with our sectorial educational training authority, and it's called CAPCITA. Unfortunately, it has been in administration for a long time. It's slowly coming to its feet. But that's really where a lot of the work in terms of accredited training comes from. We think private companies should develop programs that will address skills development and empower black employees within organizations, provide provision of bursaries, provision of learnerships, and making sure that always at the center of every company there is some form of learning taking place. And definitely the five elements and the codes of conduct do ensure that this is being addressed. Government should also establish, we've talked about CAPCITA, but we feel that maybe the fact that CAPCITA includes the sports platform, that maybe the focus on tourism is lost, and that maybe there is an opportunity here to really say, shouldn't we just be having a CETA which is specifically focused on tourism? And then the fourth element which I wanted us to touch on when I opened on this part of the presentation, focused monitoring and autonomy, that the council should be reinstituted as a wholly autonomous body. We will present on this, and that the council should continue monitoring BBBE in public and private sectors, but not just monitor, but also come up with rewards and consequences, and that government departments and entities should be verified for BBBE. If government is going to be a client or procure services from different players in the tourism sector, it does become problematic many times when wanting to attribute certain spend with government onto your BE scorecard if government entities are not accredited. So let me give an example. Electricity or utilities in any business can be one of the highest expenses of procurement. But if you are procuring that from a municipality, it's highly unlikely that you're ever going to be able to get any credit for that on your BE scorecard. So that's what that point is talking to. And then, of course, government departments, we are urging government departments to design mechanisms to enforce and fast-track transformation in any form, which is why we are all seated here today together. So that formed the first action. The second action was supporting new entrants into the market, recommending that we should have what is called a tourism transformation fund. This fund is in place. It's financed and funded by the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, which means the private sector is playing its role. and it's also in part funded by South African Tourism. There is a whole criteria in terms of who is eligible, but it allows a platform for any, you know, great ideas that sometimes will not get funded by your traditional IDCs or Development Banks of South Africa to have access. The third action was institutional support for new and existing businesses. And as recommended by the Council, the Department developed the Tourism BBBE or is in the process of developing the portal that I spoke about earlier. There's also a Black Industrialist program for tourism businesses that needs to be established, and we've talked a lot about this. Where are these Black industrialists? You know, in one of our conversations as a council, we know where those areas are. I'll give an example. Every single hotel needs towels or linen. And typically when we go to buy, we will then procure from white-owned companies that are either manufacturing in South Africa, and because a lot of manufacturing is no longer taking place here in South Africa, importing and bringing in from Pakistan or China or India. The players are notoriously white and very reluctant, again, to allow Black participants to come in and learn what the trade is. And we think that maybe what we should actually be doing is agreeing a case study and going to Butterworth in Eastern Cape to find a small mill and handhold a group of women to become the providers of linen and terry in the industry, as an example. But it would mean that we would have to get onto the ground in terms of implementation of something like that.
Mm.
And that's what we are talking about when we talk about innovation and in industrialists in particular. And bring them through, make sure that we handhold in the presentation of the business plan, assist in the bankability of a sustained business plan so that banks find it attractive, get players who are known big players in the tourism sector and hospitality sector to put their hands up, as in handholding and assisting. You know, it can become very technical when you talk about a towel. It's not a towel that you just go and buy at, you know, Mr. Price. We talk about thread counts and how thick it must be, if you are 1-star or 2-star or 3-star, what type of towel you must have. But those are all the technical things that need to be passed on and trained to those entrants. So I'm giving an example, being very specific about what we mean when we talk about a Black industrialist program for the tourism sector. Action 4 was tourism human resource development. In the past and previous council, we introduced an executive development program. This was in together with UNISA women, a specific program for women with the UNISA business unit. And it's been very successful. We've had 2 sittings and a total of 40 Black women who are working already in the tourism and hospitality industry have been taken through executive programs, which later on some of them have even continued studying, and there are a few examples who have even gotten degrees as a result of that. The main focus of this executive development is to ensure that when these young women are done with their studies, they can be considered when it comes to management control of businesses. Because many times you'll see when you are in any business, the workers are Black and they are female and they are from the previously disadvantaged sectors. But once you start moving into management, you start seeing more of our white male counterparts who are playing a bigger role. So by putting these women through executive programs, we are also saying to the industry, come and join and participate now going forward. And because this was fully funded by the National Department of Tourism, we now want the industry also to assist in participating in funding this program. So enabling Black women to go for executive training where they will learn financial skills, marketing skills, skills that will allow them to sit around the boardroom so that people are not only talking about 1 or 2 supposedly successful Black women, but many more Black women in our industry. And the fifth action was recognition and reward, and this is where, again, wanting to platform and to show where there has been success, rewarding the success, and making sure that these role models are showcased to the rest of the industry so that we can see replication of even more successful entities. So that was what came out of the previous council. When we came in as a new council, we studied that, we looked at it. We said, what do we want to continue running with? A lot of what I've already highlighted is still very much wanting and in need of further work. So you'll see that when we now talk about the recommendations for the new council, we highlight these as following. We've talked about reorganizing the Tourism BBBE Charter Council as an independent body, and as such we've started the process. We are in discussion with the Tourism Business Council of South Africa, which is represented by many players who come from the tourism business sector and who pay membership fees. This is where our TOMSA levy is also paid. And mainly to get that participation of the private sector so that they feel vested, they feel that they are part of the transformation process. And removing our council from the mother body, the National Department of Tourism, because, you know, the truth is the players on the ground get suspicious if they see a body called the Transformation Council coming from a national department. They always become a bit suspicious. What's in it for me? What does government want? So by really moving it and making it institutionalized within the ambit of the private sector, we believe is going to assist. This is going to be a process, of course. We need to make sure that what we do is sustained. And so you will see later on, we'll talk about the transition and how we hope to manage that. We want to improve communications of the work and the success of the council. We really want to be far much more outspoken. All the individuals on this council sit on different platforms. We sit on many different forums where really every opening sentence should be about transformation. We try in our workplaces, but it's something that we think that we should be doing more. We need to be publicizing. We need to be using, as I mentioned earlier, on opportunities for road trips and round trips around the province to get the work that we are doing known out there. We want to, in this new council, create an enabling environment for the mainstreaming of transformation and to help tourism enterprises embrace the agenda. So the council is going to engage stakeholders through major events, and we want to use major events like the Tourism Indaba, Meetings Africa that happens in March. Indaba is usually in May, World Tourism Markets that takes place in Cape Town, and just any other platforms like SATSA and other tourism conferences that take place where the council will always make sure that they are represented and are talking of the work and are really getting a vested buy-in from the rest of the industry to participate energetically and robustly in this journey of ours of transformation. We want the council to consult with various tourism entrepreneurial awards on how best to recognize and also award tourism businesses that are showing strong BBBE statuses. And maybe we will use the Lilizela platform, which is where businesses are awarded for participation in the tourism industry. Or maybe this is an opportunity where, again, we need to say, how do we make sure that we create a new platform for recognition of those successful entities? The other recommendation is on procurement. Procurement from small businesses by both private and government sectors. And I think I've already talked a little bit about that. We want also to organize campaigns targeting government and private sector to procure from black-owned businesses. We think this is critical. The council should hold transformation roundtables. I've mentioned this, not just in the main city centers, but in some of the smaller areas, so that everyone can start participating. There should be enterprise and supplier development in Indaba. And when we talk about an enterprise and supplier development in Indaba, we're saying, let's have a place where all the small businesses that are supported by some of the bigger businesses can be showcased. And in showcasing, there's a cross-pollination. So one entity might be providing spinach or tomatoes or vegetables and fruits to one small hotel, but by being showcased at an enterprise supply development in Indaba, you are now giving them access to new markets and networking that they may not previously have thought is so easily accessible. So we certainly have got that as one of the goals on our radar screen. Our other recommendation is to strengthen the human resource development program, particularly the women's program that I spoke about. So if we've had 40 successful women in our upcoming 3 years, we are looking at a target like minimum of 80 candidates in the next 3 years. And here we want now not only National Department of National Department of Tourism to be funding this, but for the private sector to participate. There should also be tracking and profiling of these individuals. There's an example of, for example, a young lady who was a junior sous chef, and just by going through this program is now an executive chef in a particular hotel. And that means that this person is progressing. They're now sitting on the executive committee. They're now earning a bigger salary. They're now in a leadership position. So those are the examples that we talk about when we say we want to track the successes. We also want to start a mentor program. That some of, you know, the older people like ourselves who have been in this industry for a long time play our role in mentoring and supporting the younger ones coming through. Going on with our recommendations for our work going forward, we want to look at additional work that is required in the area of funding. We think there's a need, or we believe there's a need, to review the Tourism Transformation Fund that I alluded to earlier on, and especially making sure that the criteria is crystal clear and that those entities that are looking for any potential funding from this fund know exactly how to access it, know exactly how to apply for it, and that it can be given out as required. There is a need to set minimum targets or some sort of measure of how many black entrepreneurs or enterprises should be funded in a year. And these are things, like I've just said, we want in 3 years to have funded 80 women. We also need to be saying how many entities will we be funding, and we will be putting that together as a council. We'd like an intervention mechanism that could be established to develop and help unsuccessful applicants to become successful in the future. So I spoke earlier on of examples of people who have really great ideas, need funding, but when they go through a process either with the IDC or with the NEF, they are declined on technicalities that are applied by the bigger banks, the commercial banks. So can these be applied not in a reckless manner, because we know money is money, but in a manner that also gives hope to individuals? And what model will we be able to come up with? This is something that the Committee on Funding will look at. But there definitely is a need to establish a fund that targets startups so that they are given some sort of leg up. And more will be done on this enterprise development model. We noted also that there is a gap when it comes to ICT skills in our sector, and the reality also of what the fourth industrial revolution is bringing. What are the implications? You know, I spoke earlier on that when we have subcommittee meetings, we'll Skype in or we'll Zoom in. These are the realities of what is happening in our industry, and we fear that the fourth industrial revolution is moving faster than we are able to cope, and we need to start understanding what those requirements are and make sure that we're addressing them. So at the heart of it, before I move into the institutionalization of our charter, if I were to summarize what I've just spoken about, I would say really at the heart of it is, on the one leg, redress. How do we look at what is not working? How do we ensure that if I give an example of what is government's role and what they can do when it comes to participating with early payments, you know, how can government, for example, make sure that when it comes to procurement, that we can engage with Treasury and say your procurement processes are so stringent that you actually are leaving out of the fast lane some of the new entrants. This 80-20 principle, where 80% is on functionality, means that it's your usual white companies that are going to get the business on price point, on quality, on ease of supply, ease of stock, and the 20% emphasis on BEE is always going to be forgotten. So it's almost a contradiction. It is a contradiction. So it needs to be addressed. And we will need the portfolio committee in assisting us with this redress of legislative framework. The issue of early payments that I raised earlier on, so that businesses can have cash flow and so that they can run their businesses successfully. Capacity building. There is no doubt that capacity building is highly required for those small entrants that are trying to get their heads above, you know, drowning points. Access to marketing channels that we have alluded to. Funding, which I just can't stop underscoring, and coming up with creative methods. On the other leg, we also think that innovation is an area that we all need to be focused on. Who are the new disruptors? Are we listening to them? Are we hearing them? Are we giving them a platform? How do we make sure that we also have new black industrialists that we can introduce into our sector and use as case studies, but also accelerate and fast track? How do we make sure that in innovation we are looking at the value chain and not using the usual comfort areas of, you know, B&Bs and catering and shuttles, but going beyond and ensuring that every aspect of the value chain is addressed? And when you look at the value chain, you look at the chain, you look at where you there's volume, there's a requirement for volume. My example of towels, my example of lights, and really getting new players to understand that there are opportunities out there. And then how do we make sure that we give scale to these individuals when they are now given those platforms and can be successful? So redress and innovation. We also many times as the council talk about what is that bucket of hurdles? What are the stumbling blocks? What are the aspects that make it really, really difficult for us to get through? And I think I've alluded to most of them. Mainly access to markets, mainly capacity building, mainly funding, policy advocacy, making sure that legislation is working, and definitely, you know, the visibility of this council, making sure that this council is looked at as a council that can speak on behalf of the disenfranchised and on behalf of the demarginalized players in our industry. And so moving forward, what we will be doing is embarking very quickly on a process of institutionalization of the council so that our work can really begin in earnest. We envisage that in the next quarter, we will spend a lot of time putting together a structure, and this structure has to be very simple. We're not looking to create a big entity that is going to be top-heavy and require a lot of funding and resourcing. And part of the discussion is with the Tourism Business Council of South Africa to say, is there an opportunity, for example, when we move out of the ambit of the National Department of Tourism, to find a home either at the Tourism Business Council or with one of the members of the Tourism Business Council? So we're literally talking about an office and a presence from a private sector perspective, where there can be shared services, shared switchboard, shared finance services, shared HR services, but allowing the council to at least have, if you look at our structure, the council that would exist of the council members that you see here, chief transformation officer, who would be the voice of the council and the driver of all the work, and two legs of work, one leg being research and monitoring and the other being policy advocacy, and the secretariat. In the beginning, the secretariat will continue being the secretariat that National Department of Tourism has advanced to us. National Department of Tourism would continue funding it until such time that the council can stand on its feet. Eventually, that secretariat can really be one individual who has the skills and ability to manage you know, appointments and coordination and logistical aspects. So our transition, we believe, will begin, has already begun, and we hope that in the course of the 3 years that we are here, that we will, from September to September, when we report back to you, Honourable Chairperson, be coming to tell you in our next September meeting that we are already now fully housed in our own place. And we hope that we'll be able to meet that target. You'll see that we did provide in your presentation some of what we think could be the strategic program. One of the activities that we are currently embarking on is the alignment of the 2015 code. So the Department of Trade and Industry has recently amended its code, and So we have looked at where this is applicable in terms of areas of alignment for the tourism sector. And areas of alignment are as follows. Definitely with preferential procurement, there are opportunities to put more emphasis. I've spoken about enterprise and supplier development. Looking at empowering suppliers, skills development, which we've talked about, sub-minimum requirements for priority areas. And sorry, if I jump back to skills, you'll see that when we looked at skills development, there's a new aspect, for example, introduction of bursaries, so that entities actually will score higher points where they're providing proper bursaries to their employees or to individuals who join them to come and work in their areas, be it transport, be it hotels or accommodation, be it travel services. We want also to make sure that in our alignment that we look at general principles and interpretations and definitions. We don't foresee any changes under ownership and management control because in the previous alignment we were quite robust and we still have a higher requirement of ownership of 30% compared to many other industries that are below that, maybe at 25 or 26%. But we are looking at ownership still at 30% in terms of ownership and management control. And the industry may recommend additional changes other than that was what was introduced by DTI. So we're in a process of consultation on the ground. Members of the council are visiting different provinces. I will ask some of the members to give feedback on where they've been in terms of if you look at our consultation schedule. We've already covered quite a lot of ground. We've already been to Cape Town, as I alluded, but we had to come back and address some of the members of Guguletu. We've been to George, we've been to Kimberley. We've been to Port Elizabeth, East London, Durban and Pietermaritzburg. We've also been to Bloemfontein. And there are still so many other visits upcoming. And so, Honourable Chairperson, I thank you for allowing me this opportunity where I could present on behalf of the Council what was achieved in the past but what we hope to achieve going forward. We are still in the process of drawing up our plan of action, our program for the next 3 years, but as you can see, we are in parallel already on the ground and trying to already implement some of what it is. So it will be the institutionalization of the Council, the setting up of the committees that will be meeting in this coming month of November, definitely the process of the alignment of the DTI scorecard currently is on our focus. But going forward, all the recommendations that I've listed are going to be really at the forefront of what our business plan is going to be all about, or our program of action is all about. I'll open up and hand back to you, Honourable Chairperson, but I don't know if you'd also like to use this opportunity either to get questions going or to get a view of how so far the visits to the different provinces have been going. Should we ask some of our members maybe just to give some feedback before we go for questions and answers from the honourable members? Any of the members from the council who can just give one or two words? I'll ask Me Matati, and she's been to some of them, and Professor Mbenga to give some input.
I think, thank you, Chair, for the wonderful presentation. In terms of the provincial visits, dealing with the draft amendments to the Tourism BEE Charter Council, which is to the codes, we have found that it differs from province to province in that the attendance, one, we have had poor attendance from local government supply chain officers and provincial procurement officers, because these codes speak to them necessarily to unlock the blockages in terms of the spending of government into SMEs. The other problems we've had is that there is no clear understanding of many of the local government officials in terms of the value of tourism at the local government level. So most of them would then request us or have requested that there needs to be another round discussion on what do the tourism or the codes mean in terms of a local government perspective. And from province to province, we've made the observation that essentially these BE codes, people are asking what are the consequences for non-compliance. And so therefore, as a council, we are working on how do we best address that. But I think on my left, my judge will then further elaborate on some of those key discussions. Others included some innovation to the codes, where we have heard that we've encouraged people to look at the bonus point system. For instance, at the skills development level, one of the ideas that came out was to say maybe there needs to be more bonus points for skills development that translates into entrepreneurship. So spending more of your money in terms of upskilling young people, but then converting them into entrepreneurs who get the very same business from that institution that teaches them. So those are some of the discussions we've been having.
Thank you, Chair, and for your presentation as well. And I think just to add...
Yeah, maybe before you proceed, thank you very much, Ntate Nesang. It's just a short intervention. The member of the committee here, who is also the president of the AIC, is rushing to another committee. So we would have wanted him to at least say something briefly before he goes. That meeting on the budget is at 12. So you've got 4 minutes to be there. So in the 4 minutes, you can do both the talking and the walking. Over to you, President.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. First and foremost, let me appreciate the presentation by the Council. It is very touching sometimes because we all know that if we wanted to change the situation around in South Africa in terms of empowering the poorest of the poor masses of this country, tourism is the best kind of a vehicle that can promote sustainable economic development, more especially in our rural areas. Chair, I read the mandate of the council and also the concerns about the funding. My understanding is that the council is being funded by the Department of Tourism. I don't know, Chair, whether we can, as a committee, in supporting this kind of a council, perhaps lobby the parliament for the council to get a direct funding from the treasury instead of depending on what the Department on Tourism is giving them. I'm saying this, Honorable Chair, because we have a government agency, for instance, your National Development Agency, which is getting money from the government, not from any department, but directly from the government. Can't we lobby Parliament to do the same to the Council? Because if you check the mandate of your National Development Agency, I don't want to say it's more or less the same, but they can, the agency and the council, they can complement each other in terms of fighting poverty, as far as NDA is concerned, in terms of empowering our poorest of the poor masses in this country. I should think if the council can get a direct funding from government, they can do better, Chair. I will come back. Thank you.
Okay, Honorable President, you are released to go to the briefing at 12 o'clock. that is noted. So when we do the way forward, we'll engage on it. Okay, proceed, Osaka.
I just wanted to add to say of the consultation sessions that some of us have taken part in, I think the sentiments in terms of the challenges of the grant are very much covered in what the chairperson has presented. And I think the real major issue was around communication and visibility of this council. Literally boots on the ground. To be able to assist a lot of the struggling SMEs to be able to, one, to see how they can comply, you know, in making sure that they participate in the transformation and the program. But the other issue was, Chairperson, was very, very interesting observation across was to say, and I think it's within the spirit of what you said when you welcomed us here as a council member, was how do we go about, as South Africans, talk about transformation? That if we're going to do negative talk about transformation, it's not going to take us anywhere because it becomes very acrimonious. Because transformation is everybody's business. It's in the interest of all of us as South Africans to be able to make sure that we move this country forward. And how are we going to move it? We're going to move it forward, one, and one end to be able to address the whole issue of redressing the past imbalances of our country. And that requires a different strategy altogether, which is what the chairperson was talking about. But and then the other part is how do we then begin to develop parallel industries and sectors? Because there's a lot of pockets of excellence, pockets of undiscovered opportunities within our communities that can be able to make sure that we don't have to rob Peter to pay Paul to be able to advance the agenda. And both these strategies, these boxes require different strategies. And that's what was coming very much on the ground. And it's for us as a council to say, how do we begin to push these things together? And hence the chair is talking about it here, your portfolio, because we're going to push this thing together as a balancing act going forward, the work that we need to do. So we found a lot of that coming out from the ground. Hence, one of the suggestions that came out was, how do we begin to address, maybe bring tools like the NESFA kind of a system of funding? Because people don't have money, and you know, a lot of these institutions, I work with the IDC a lot, they require anything between 10 to 20% contribution. And if you don't have anything, where are you going to contribute this from? You know, IDC sits with a lot of distressed assets, and for them to be able to dig it out, you know, which is one of the suggestions some of us have made to IDC, is how do you make this available to private industrialists so that they can get fast-tracked into the sector? But their mandate as a development finance institution, because they don't get a grant from government, they have to raise money from the market. They have to charge you max-related interest, even if maybe it could be 1% lower than what you get in the market, but they still charge you because they have to pay back the money they've borrowed. So therefore, we then have to begin to say, how do we then help people to bridge this financing model with a different mixture of strategies? And that's what we picked up on the ground as well. You know, so really, it's been very, very eye-opening, and most important for us as a council to be out there and pick up what are the challenges that people are facing as we go forward. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much for those early indications on what is coming from the ground as far as this matter is concerned. So we will start, honorable members, with you are welcome, Honorable Sithole. We did indicate that you are on your way here. Yeah, so we will conclude with you. We'll conclude with you. Honorable April, there's no need to raise hands, members. You know how the chair operates. So speaking is compulsory. So we'll start from that extreme with Honorable April. Then we'll come like that. Then before we come to Chief Chair here, I will check with him that is taller whether he wants to say something. Honorable April.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me first take the opportunity to welcome the report as it is given. I am one of those people that really appreciate when we hear about the progressive things that is there on the paper. But I'm more moved when I hear about things that is actually done. The one thing that is that you have said in the beginning, before you even entered into your presentation, was the fact that government departments are still using entities as hotels, yours in particular, and not paying, which makes small businesses suffer, and which obviously is constraining the advancement of any black entrepreneur that has aspirations to better himself or herself, as it were. And that is one of the things that I think that must be highlighted, and not because it's yours, but because it has become a norm and nobody is no longer talking about things like this that is happening. I must also say, Chairperson, that the transformation is still very, very slow when we look at what is happening on the ground, and the bulk of when we look at management, strategic management of entities, as it were, and when we look at ownership patterns across the board, I can still tell you that very little has been done in 26 years. And we are going to need to have an aggressive approach in terms of how are we going to rectify this imbalance, because the pressure is mounting from the black poor majority, people like us who were born in the Free State, who kind of didn't read about poverty. We have experienced it. It's a lived reality for our brothers and sisters, as it is even today. So, Chair, I want to welcome the report and then just also add my two cents with regards to I want to hear more about what was done. You see, to visit the provinces and to do the road shows is one thing that is good, but we want to hear what has happened after your road show, because it doesn't help. Meeting after meeting and nothing gets implemented is not what we would advocate for. So thank you. That is my contribution.
Thank you very much, Chair. And let me also welcome the presentation, and also echo that I'm very much excited to see that there is such a very important structure within our tourism sector, which is there to ensure that there is transformation within the industry and tourism industry. Chair, I would like to, my first question, others are going to be recommendations, or just maybe you'll take them whether they suit your charter or not, but just to echo my also interest, or let not say personal interest, but my concerns. I would like to check if you have in your charter considered the Sixth Parliament dream, which is to see the Dorpies, the townships and the villages being very much empowered, and which I don't see much of it here, because most of the places are not specifically mentioned as to where the transformation is really taking place. So we want to hear more, because it's the new presentation. I'm happy that there is one of our senior department here who knows very well our dream as the Sixth Parliament. Maybe she will share that with you as you do your plan. You also, we wish that you can incorporate that. Number two, as we talk about the vibrant tourism, I want to also reiterate to say villages, townships and dorpies. We want to see it vibrant. And also, I will be very much happy to see the funding of the small businesses happening, because that is one of the stumbling blocks that actually hinders our communities to say that progress is impossible. You know, without funding, there's no progress. So I am so happy to see that you are actually intervening on that one. Number two, I want to find that, number three, I want to find out about the franchising. You know, there is this thing called franchising, of hotels and other businesses which are tourism related. And they actually are there to be a problem coming to our SMMEs. I will not talk about triple PEEs. There are many two E's and B's there, but I'll talk about SMMEs because they are talking to the same level of people who need the same assistance. Where you find that procurement policies of the franchise, I would like some attention when I speak, Chair. Thank you. Chair, franchises are actually confining hotels and other businesses as to where to buy, and that limits the SMMEs who are farmers who produce fresh vegetables or those who are doing packaging in food packaging. And remember, the Department of Agriculture is working very hard to ensure that they become successful. And their main clients should be the hotels, because that's where most of food consumption is happening. So I'm getting very much worried about the franchise, and I want to know, how do you deal with this difficult part of it? I know it's very difficult to deal with franchising. Number three is... I will say number four. Can you help me counting? Is your charter addressing or aligned to the president of this country's wish, which is the SONA? I think you should have gone through the SONA and understood very well his wish, being to see unemployment reducing in South Africa through tourism. When you look at your charter and its implementation plan, is it addressing such concerns, and is it achievable or measurable, or is it really smart to implement the wishes of the president through tourism? You know, tourism is one of the vehicles that will bring transformation or change to people's lives. So is that practicable with this plan of your triple PEE charter? There are forums that are being planned, although we haven't processed the document very well. And I had the main presenter talking about forums. I'm not sure which level are the forums that she was talking about. And we do also have dreams of having forums at the local government level that will ensure that there's tourism and tourism is alive at this level. So I want to see if we can... there is a way, Chair, to ensure that there's a triple BE and the forums that we are talking about, whether they can make this dream possible, because they're already there. How many? The sixth one.
Six.
I'll refer you to page 41. Page 41. Of the presentation, let me also page it. I'm talking about it. All right. I will talk about bulletin 1, bulletin 3, and bulletin 4, which is the council response to the findings of the study. Those findings of the study, I like where it says private companies should develop programs to address skill development and empower black employees through organizations.
Yeah.
Okay? Am I correct? Within the organizations. And the last one is the one that is actually making me very, very excited. You say government departments should design mechanisms to enforce and fast-track transformation, which I don't see happening. I know you're trying your best, but I know you'll ultimately get there because I have trust in you and to the leadership, particularly when it's led by a woman. There should be, it says again, there should be innovation in the trust in the tourism sector. Here, Chair, I'm referring to, when I refer it or interpret it myself, I'm referring to our black women and men who are not employed, who are hungry for employment. We have linen day in and day out that is used by the hospitality facilities. And that linen is taken to laundries, you know, a machine, a laundry. When we can have the department that is relevant to work with you to form those cooperatives for women in the villages or closer to those hotels to do laundry for those hotels. That will reduce unemployment and actually practice what the president was actually wishing and to ensure that there's employment and also supplying of those nearby farmers vegetables. That is also another plan to say we want to see transformation quickly as possible. Challenges of online booking, Chair. Remember, I know it's not what you press. There's nothing that you can do, Madam COO, but I know it is very difficult because it's a technology that we can't reverse or maybe say we're working against. But how do you think you would deal with it? Because most of black businesses are being now excluded through this online booking. And how do you ensure that you bring the balance of business sharing through this online booking thing? The equitable share of the SMMEs, where is it? The last point that I am going to raise is about provincial visits. I know you may not be entitled to do provincial visits, but because you are doing monitoring and evaluation, you should be surely touching on provinces. And there's no way you can do it without provinces because nationally is composed of provinces. I want to say, how do you monitor? You know, tourism is the only place which I think tourism is very high is the Western Cape, particularly transport tourism and accommodation. The provincial transport and tourism, I don't know, or whichever sector, I will be corrected if I'm wrong, segregation in terms of issuing permits to those who transport tourists, and to find others who are very small, which are SMMEs, given certain category which will not benefit them in profit-wise, and give those big monopoly or monopolizing companies who have buses and many taxes, who have money, bigger contracts and bigger permits to ensure that they get bigger share of those tourists to get out of Hobart Amaiza up and down. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know how we're doing for time. I'm going to try to contain myself generally. Thank you to the presenter for the presentation. I think it was an important presentation. I think it would be wrong if we said that it isn't worrying to see how poorly transformed the sector is. And there is a sense of a mismanagement on the side of government, and we can look at, it doesn't matter where it is, we can look at different places or role players in how the regulations over time should have been set up and in how we should have managed empowerment policies, I think, generally. But
I mean, I'm just make one point. I think we've been clear from our side around two issues that we think are important, right? So I've brought to this committee the issue around the cost of grading as an example of something that we need to completely remove that cost, because there are benefits to grading. It upholds certain standards, it brings people into the market, and the cost is an obstacle. And on the second matter is on the Tourism Amendment Bill. So I disagree, for instance, with my colleague who's just spoken about the Tourism Amendment Bill and online booking portals, because what they actually do is they actually push out the very big players in the market and they compete with them. So the very big players in the market want to therefore stop them, because they know that I can, for instance, set up my own home and actually compete with somebody actually who's got a lot more marketing power. So that's the kind of, that's what online booking portals actually do, is they bring that competition to the market. So I think we've been clear on that. So I want to know, because what are some, in your view, what are some of the immediate obstacles which can be removed to make it easier for new business and jobs specifically in the sector, which will advance transformation? I know the when we generation takes time to develop this, but I just really want to find out, because there's a number of things that we can do, and I think you've presented them in the long run that need to be addressed. But I would like to know, I think from the council, that if you had to say right now, this A, B, C, D, and E are the immediate obstacles we must remove to advance new business, new jobs, and ultimately transformation in the sector, what exactly are those that we need to consider? Thanks.
Honorable Krambok.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to Ms. Sangweni Sir, for presentation that was provocative, depressing, and informative all at the same time. But I want to agree with you, Chair, and with some of my colleagues from the ANC as well, who have correctly highlighted that we're not there yet. And I want to look at the presentation in terms of historical perspective and more on a macro level, because a century ago, we had a thriving entrepreneurial class that was black in this country, actually. Lots of small businesses starting up, beginning to become bigger businesses, and then there was a wave of repressive legislation. This was well before 1948. I'm talking about the turn of the last century. Basically designed to force black people off their land, dispossess them of their land, and force them into the mines. That's what happened. A century later, we've had democracy for 25 years, and we're having a discussion how we empower the majority in this country. There's something isn't working. That's why I agree with my colleague, Honorable Bumby. But listening to the presentation, for me, a number of themes did emerge. I went on two oversight visits to boutique hotels, which included a safari experience in Game Drive recently in KwaZulu-Natal. I didn't encounter one white person. Right from the people who welcomed you there, to the game rangers themselves, to the people who gave you a massage in the spa thing, the management of that, I didn't see any white people. But I did get the sense that behind that perhaps 25 million rand enterprise was an owner who was probably white. So that's why I agree with Ms. Sido that it is possibly an issue of ownership and management, which is untransformed, rather than participation, because there is participation by black people in the tourism industry, but I don't think at the levels that we'd all like to see, to the extent that should be there. But my problem, Chairperson, is that as much as I agree with the sentiments that have been expressed, I would really like this issue to be quantified in a way that we can understand the numbers. Because if I take a different example of a very big enterprise, not a safari game lodge type situation, which might be owned by a few people, but perhaps a company listed on the JSE, in the tourism sector. You could find him, the behind you is the gentleman from Feldhauser. You could find that the ownership of that company is owned mainly by trade unions in this country. Trade unions are the biggest, I'm told, in many cases, the biggest single investor in JSE-listed companies. So what is the ownership actually? Is it actually so monochromatic as we'd like to believe, or is there, in fact, a fair degree of transformation? If there is a degree of transformation in the biggest companies, how much actually? Is it 20%? Is it 40%? Is it majority? I don't know, but I think we need those answers. Because then what we're really looking at is the missing middle. Why aren't there, and it's a point Ms. Nguyen Soto made, why aren't there more medium-sized industrialists, is the word that you used. One doesn't often use the word industrialist in the tourism sector, but I got your point. Why aren't there major investors who happen to be black running those bigger tourism outlets? What we do find is a very small entry into the B&B thing, but because of the reasons that you mentioned, which is in a sense intergenerational poverty, and so white-dominated tourist resorts then have a long track record with supplies over the years, it's hard to break into that. But that I think we all understand. But the real question is, why haven't we developed in 25 years people who can actually compete on an equal basis with those established businesses? So I really did want to look at the effect of the preferential procurement that you referred to. So many years ago, about 15 years ago, this Parliament passed an act about preferential procurement. And the point was made then that there is a policy trade-off. There is a trade-off here. So, for example, if you have a procurement policy that says X amount of the scorecard will be based on a BEE type component, and the rest will be on quality and price, and let's say that component is 20%, what it means is that somebody can actually tender. The price is 20% more, but the quote is the same because they get points for being BEE compliant, and they win the contract. Okay, that's a policy decision. What it means is you're now furthering transformation in that particular instance, but you're paying 20% more for the same product. And the example that was made in the old assembly back in whenever it was, it was the second term of parliament, was yes, you would have empowered those people, but if you pay 20% more on a huge contract for school textbooks, it means they're 20% less school textbooks. So there is a trade-off. Now, I ask myself, if we are successful in the second part of your presentation, because you've really touched on two areas. You've looked at regulation to a very large extent amongst existing role players. You've even gone so far to suggest there should be a 3% fund contributed by existing role players to help empower on a soft loan basis, maybe over 3 years, competitors, which I think is unrealistic. I don't think anyone's going to want to finance their own competition, right? But nevertheless, you've looked at several regulatory possible solutions how we can speed up transformation. On the other hand, you've touched on, perhaps not quite to the same extent, is how do we build up fresh role players and increase the supply side, okay? So it's a regulatory framework as a one side and a free market supply side empowerment on the other. Those are the two legs that you've actually essentially presented. Let's assume you have a whole lot of people, let's take Cape Town, who successfully get into the side of B&Bs specializing in township tours, okay? That we also had a presentation here 5 or 6 years ago about the problems and challenges that those people had. Interestingly, the people that came and testified to us in this committee said that the biggest problem was other people from the same demographic as the people in Khayelitsha working in big international hotels in the CBD telling the international visitors, don't go there, it's not safe. So in a sense, we were laying down our own side to sort of try and reflect that narrative. But let's say you have all these people, and now you have them wanting to buy towels, because that's the example you use. And you then said to us that 20% there was not enough because it's really 80% is on price and quality. In your opinion, and this is a question I'm asking because this is where I think the rubber hits the road. Let's say you have 100 newly empowered, possibly through soft loans provided by government, B&B entrepreneurs in Khayelitsha specializing in offering a township tour experience. And now they've got to set up their B&B. They've got to buy towels, they've got to buy linen, they've got to do everything they need to do that. in your opinion, do you think they're going to go to, because you talked about black and white, go to a black supplier because they're black and pay more? You see, and that's where the rubber hits the road, because I think that person there is going to be wanting to make a profit. When they set up their B&B, they're doing it because they want to create an income for themselves, put their kids through better education, otherwise word of God, maybe send them to university, buy a new car, whatever the case may be, and their motivation is going to be profit. So will they go and buy the product which is more expensive, or will they buy a product that is the most competitive? Because the most competitive product is what's going to drive their business forward and allow their business to expand because they're making more money. And I raise that as an example, Ms. Songreni Sibyl, because the question I have after your presentation is, do you get a sense that if people are motivated by success, in the example, for example, that I've quoted you, would it not be more effective to look at the second part of your presentation and ask ourselves, rather than trying to regulate and tell an emerging entrepreneur, you can't buy from this person even though they're cheapest because they're their own color, you've got to look at the professional preferential procurement angle. Can't you do more, and wouldn't it be more effective to actually grow our base of entrepreneurs, and particularly because we're talking about transformation, black entrepreneurs? So I like the idea. And a few years ago, similar, it was before your time, but your predecessor talked about a scheme, and it was in a different room in the old assembly, about how we could make grants available, exactly as you said, like the NISFAS thing. If you succeed, you get to keep it. If you fail, it's a loan, right? And there was quite a big emphasis by your predecessor in actually growing the pool of entrepreneurs which you could nurture and build up, and they become, from SMMEs, they become bigger and then eventually compete with the industrialists that you refer to, rather than trying to manage the outcomes only amongst existing role players. So that's my bigger existential question to you. What role do you see in that way of looking at the problem, as opposed to trying to rig prices and contracts and BEE components such that we have inevitably a large degree of market distortion and not necessarily get the industry to grow but some people to succeed at the cost of other people failing? Because I think I would rather see a burgeoning industry that's growing very fast rather than tinkering what there already is. I mean, we need more entrepreneurs, not the same but just a different color. And so how do we grow the pool rather than just trying to manipulate the outcomes amongst the existing people in the industry? That's what I took from your presentation, and I'd like you to comment on that.
Yeah, food for thought. It's just that we don't have time. But that's one thing we need to return to, Honorable Crumble. Just that we don't have time. Food for thought. Honorable Muteka.
Thank you, Jefferson. And let us welcome the presentation from the drivers of transformation in the tourist sector. Jefferson, I see resistance to transformation in this sector. Taking it from page 22, you will see the black ownership is at 43% or less. And then you come again to the women in management is 10% or less. And the just put 22, and then you go again to page 24, you go to page 27. Yeah, so those are the charts that demonstrate how poor we move in this sector in terms of transformation. But the the bone that has got meat that we have to eat a lot is on page 25. Chapter 7, this is a demonstration of how South Africa is untransformed. 7 provinces are at 48% or less. 7 provinces. And we are at 51% in Mpumalanga and 56% in Limpopo. What does it mean? The blacks are having higher ownership in the poor provinces. Where there is a lot of meat, the blacks are not owning anything. That's how this graph is telling us. And then, Chairperson, to start, let me say, resistance to transformation is a very tough thing to fight against. And we can't massage it. You have to use tough, aggressive, radical manner to push it, to divide it. And the other thing, when we talk of transformation, when we say we have arrived at the era where we're not going to talk of black, white, or whatever, it's when the black people are owning the means of production. Not many black people participating as workers only and all that. Let's take an example with a farm. In a farm, all workers, provide them they're black, all of them. But the money they get at the end of the month doesn't even make 1% of what the farmer is making. So we can't call it transformation. That's why I always say, numbers alone can mislead you. You must get in and get figures of money, and then we'll talk the real transformation. So my advice to the body is that let us not we wish that this and this must happen. We wish and this and this. Let's set standards. Let's say we want so much money out of the transformation fund to be spent in the villages, and we want so much to be spent in the townships, because this level of poverty goes like that. Villages, townships, then small towns. So you must spend in a manner of in a biased manner of empowering the poorest of the poor. But if we are going to talk and write, that's why my colleague is talking of centuries ago, decades ago, the situation was like this. Because people talk, write transformation. They don't aggressively, robustly, and radically do it, push for it. That system, the former Minister of Sports Mbalula was using in the sports. It was proper. That's why some people didn't like him. It was proper because it's either you reach this target or you are not funded anymore, or you are not supported anymore. It should be like that. There must be consequences for your resistance to transformation. It can't be just they don't do it. If they don't do it, then what? We'll never get where we want to go. We are going to allow resisting agents to continue resisting like that. We must defeat this thing. She gave a good example of black industrialists. It's not going to happen by just talking. In her example, she said Butterworth, she can they can go to Butterworth, establish women together. Butterworth was just one of the examples of the rural towns. So then you have Skukuna, then you have Vembe, then you have Maike. You do it deliberately. Deliberately. I can tell you, by the end of your term, you'll be celebrated. But when you start, everybody's going to... because it changes anyway, it's like that. They will insult you when you start this thing. Because you introduce new names of the villages that they never thought they can be mentioned. Matadiele, Mamune, what is that? But at the end, people from there, they will see, yeah, we are part of this government, really. But now, people are ashamed to be part of this democracy that they don't see. It was nice at the beginning, anxiety, because it was transformation, political and all that. At the end of the day, no results are coming out economically. So we are the ones who must push it. Okay, yeah. Finally, set those targets. And then, and with the time frames. If it's not happening, and then we come together to say, it's not happening, then what? What do we do? What do you do? If a person is saying he can't find tomatoes and cabbages, supplier from black communities, take that person to those areas and show them, yeah, the black farmers, buy from them. We must push it. It will never, the transformation will never volunteer itself because it is nice. People are very comfortable, they eat nice. So we must take from them and share. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Most of the members have taken my words, Chair. But coming close to what was presented, when I was looking at the mandate of the Charter Council, theirs is to provide guidance and share information. They have listed some, but I think there's also this department that I think they should also work with the one of small business, because there's just trade and industry here. I'm thinking of small business, Chair. When it comes to transformation, Chair, that's what we always say as politicians, that the slow pace is moving at a very slow pace. They have identified the challenge as lack to access to funding. There's also one that I would like to add, because it means of ownership to land, Chair. Because those that have big properties can easily turn their properties into game farms. The majority do not own. So when you say lack of access to funding, you must balance it with lack of access to land. You must make a balance in that. I would also want to bring to the attention of the council that as a committee, we are trying to refocus the department to look into the development of villages and small towns. So it means you must also look into that. We are trying to refocus. We want that shift from big cities to villages and small towns, because that is where poverty is. I am glad that you have identified gaps in the establishment of the council, bring those that we have left. The minister must, with the assistance of the department, you must bring those. There's this report that we have given us. There's a study that was conducted. I'm trying to bring to the attention of yourselves that this is what we say every day as politicians, out of our own oversight or out of our individual members, out of our own researchers, individuals, and oversight as politicians. It means you are sharing what we have already identified. I am now a bit surprised when you talk of shifting from being an advisor to be an NPO. I don't understand the implications. Don't understand the implications, but the minister or there was a need that there be a council. Now you want to shift to be an NPO. But it is for another meeting for us to discuss that, because we need to engage the department outside this meeting. But is it correct that they are making this proposal, that they register? I think they will be we'll be doing the same. There's a department, there's an entity, there's a committee. When I was looking at what we are planning to do, but I'm not saying it is wrong, I'm not saying it is right, but I am tempted to support the proposal of the council being funded direct. I'm tempted to support. I'm not saying I'm already there, but I'm tempted to support, because we need this council to be autonomous so that there is no influence from the industry, because the people from the industry are the ones that are resisting change. So we want that independence of the council. We want that independence. Chair, I think the other points that I highlighted have already been said by other members. Thank you very much.
I think most of the what I wanted to say has been touched by the council. But my problem would be that whether the thing which is written there is only on a paper, which or is something which is going to be implemented before that 3 years. And in that, I got only two questions to the council. Is that, can you be able, as a council, to assure us that black are participating in the sector? Do you have percentage on that? Mm-hmm. And the last question is the visibility of the council to local and provinces. How do they interact with local and provinces? How do they interact? Yeah, that's two questions I wanted to ask. Thank you, Chair.
Great.
Honorable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chair. Everything's been covered excepting for one aspect, and that is we're presuming that there is a resistance to transformation. And I would like to see more research into why this is not taking place. I suspect there are barriers that we're not aware of that prevents transformation from taking place. And I would like to see more research into what are these barriers, and what can be done to change this. So if the panel could take that into account, because I suspect that there may well be a desire to transform, but there may be barriers that prevent it from happening. or things that even possibly even government and so forth is not doing inadvertently for it not to take place. My second point is I'd like to see more research as well and work done into what government can do to entice and encourage transformation to take place voluntarily. So I'm talking about things like tax breaks and incentives and so forth. So if, for example, a supplier from a disadvantaged piece, a disadvantaged community is used, that possibly tax breaks are given and so forth. But that kind of thinking, and the reason I'm suggesting that is because we've seen internationally how these kind of incentives have actually worked and have encouraged established businesses from using other suppliers that they wouldn't ordinarily use because it is beneficial for them to do so. And that's really my point. So I'd like to see that as part of the program. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Honorable Peter.
Thanks very much, Chair. So looking at, when the charter started in 2003, it's almost 16 years, and I also want to agree with my colleagues that the transformation agenda has been indeed very slow. But say not all is lost. We can still soldier on. Want to welcome the achievements made so far. But also, if you go to page 39, lack of marketing efforts to promote new and existing SMMEs. On that one, Chair, I want to believe, especially if you take into account your 80-20 principle, maybe it's high time that that 80-20 principle should really be turned the other way around, even if you say it must now, without killing, of course, the existing businesses. Maybe you say 40-60 instead of 80-20. Then, Chair, I think as government and government entities, we are really like a fish that lays millions of eggs under the water and just keep quiet, pretend as if nothing has happened. And you take a hen that lays one egg and get out of that nest, make a lot of noise. So I think we have to change our approach when it comes to communication. We must talk about our achievements. Now, I cannot agree more that our focus should focus on small Dorpies township. I am from a township. I'm sure none of you knows where Riebeek East is. I doubt very much. You will have to go and Google. You are going to struggle still. if it's there, Chair. Riebeek East in the Eastern Cape, under Makanda, which used to be Grahamstown. Yes, Yen Farang Fort Trekkers. Oh, stationed there, and got in fact a monument, Kapitretief. So I think it's high time that we move closer to these small dorpies and villages, so that at least we also make sure that they are also on the map, Chair. In the Eastern Cape, I know when you talk tourism, you would always refer to PE East London, Umtata, as one of your rural area, but forget about these small areas. For instance, in Grahamstown, Makanda, there was a program, Chair, that was funded by provincial government called Kwam Emagana, the BNBs. Very good program. Those mamas were trained, but it has ever since collapsed. No one follows it up simply because of the late payments. When, you know, government departments come and stay, they will take time to pay those mamas. And such very good initiative just disappear or lapses. So I think we really need to walk on the talk and not just talk and not following it. And in those areas, rate of unemployment is very high, and tourism is one of the sectors that can really contribute towards that. Recently, Chair, we've just experienced a very unfortunate incident of in the country, that of attacks against foreign nationals, and of which, amongst many concerns raised by South Africans, was the fact that, without being, you know, regionalistic or xenophobic, was the fact that this industry, especially the hospitality industry, employs even, you know, the outside the country workers, even for general labor positions. I can attest to that. I know of many game farms and lodges that are actually, in fact, even where we were in Howick, where we slept, sir, you could see or sense, I've asked some of them, some are coming from Zim. I mean, it's not on just to tell you, okay, I want to take you back to your room, here's your room, here's the key, and you employ people from outside. So it's something that we have to deal with, because that's part of exploiting, you know, the cheap labor practices. So we need to look at that. The last take, Chair, from my side, I'm very happy on the industrial approach for SMMEs, because I know of hard-working women, especially in PE, my leader, whereby Omama, who are working very hard, providing linen, I mean, I'm talking of high quality, where they were employing even more than 26 young women to do that, but because of the support and the market, I believe such beautiful and good programs have ever since also lost. So we need to come on board, all of us, because it can't be, in fact, it should be a collective approach. We have to work hard in making sure that this will change the situation. Thank you very much, Chair.
Anything?
Chair, actually, most of my, thank you very much, first of all, Chairperson. And most of the question that have been, I was thinking of was covered by other members. But only two things, as Chairperson, that I want to find out. When you check on page 41,
slide 41
or page 41, Council response to the finding of the study. When you check, Chairperson, the bullet number 2, it says more accredited training should be developed by both government and the private sector for black women. But when you check on the bullet number 3, private companies should develop programs to address skills development and empower black employees within organizations. Now, I'm worried here, Chairperson, if now the private company will do their own thing without including the government. I'm worried if that one, if they can make me to understand what does that mean. And the other one, Chairperson, is the issue of transformation. If you check the last bullet, government department should design mechanism to enforce and fast-track transformation. There's nothing that the private companies should be involved, or private sectors, because they are the one who failed the government to transform. There is no transformation at all. And the last one, Chairperson, is on page 45. The consultation. Chairperson, I'm failing to understand. If they say KwaZulu-Natal, they do transformation, consultation, but they are just mentioning Durban and Pietermaritzburg. When I talk about KwaZulu-Natal, I talk about only two, one metro and one district. It is unfair. Luckily, I'm from Kanda. The rural, very rural area. I make my effort to consult with the tourism at that area. There is nothing that is happening, and there is no information, and they don't know even what is happening. But they do have an office. What I'm trying to understand, the communication, their communication and their consultation is not actually supposed to be what is happening now, because if they are talking about Devon, Devon in terms is already developed. What about the rural areas? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chief Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. Perhaps also let me appreciate the report from the BBBEE Charter Council, and perhaps just maybe remind ourselves as members of Parliament the mandate of the Council to say what the Council was formed for and what is its mandate. Because I can see some of the things that we are throwing at them have necessarily, it's not within their scope. And it's not within their mandate. But for us, it's just to consume what they have been giving us so that we as members of Parliament can go and see where transformation has not happened. And then we speak to the various stakeholders and who are supposed to be driving transformation in those specific areas. Let me appreciate the work that you've given us and the report that you are giving us as a portfolio committee, as raw as it is, as the status quo as it is, there as it is, so that we can, as members of Parliament, be able to see where much work still needs to be done. And unfortunately, honourable members, that work is not the Charter Council that needs to do, but it's for all government and the private sector and all stakeholders within the sector to do the work for transformation to be achieved. It's not the council that must hamper on and beat about transforming the sector. But one thing that I want to put at the council is that much of the members of the council are representing the sector in general. To say perhaps what we need to be doing, Chairperson and members of Parliament, is to see whether these members and their organizations which they are representing are actually some of the blockages or hindrances to transformation, you know, so that when we speak to them, we can say this group and this group and this group has not done what they are supposed to be doing. Because it's one thing to sit on the Charter Council, but it's another thing to be able to speak to your own constituencies to be able to drive the transformation agenda. And it's also our work here as members of Parliament to be looking at means and ways of driving the transformation agenda. Because the transformation agenda should not be driven by the private sector alone. It's government that must be driving this and ensuring that the environment becomes conducive for some of the things that we would want to see happening. I just thought perhaps, Chair, let me just read slide 6 to us so that we understand what the Council is all about and its mandate. And then go to one point where the Chairperson presented to us to say they've seen that the Fourth Industrial Revolution provides threats and opportunities to the tourism sector. And we have been also speaking to this ever since our establishment in this new parliament. We have been saying that in the tourism sector, we see that there are threats to employment, to warm bodies, that the Fourth Industrial Revolution is presenting. But there are also opportunities, you know. And then it is my plea and request, Chairperson, that perhaps we should ask the department to come back to us and give us both the threats and the opportunities. Because I see a situation where throughout the sixth parliament we'll be talking about threats and opportunities. So that we are able to see whether the opportunities that are there are actually speaking to the threats that have that were presented by the fourth industrial revolution, and how are jobs created? You know, the innovation of other means and ways of doing business in the sector. Because if we do not do this, Honourable Chair, we might just find ourselves in a situation where most of the jobs where people were physically doing the work, they are no longer there. And you've seen how the banks are trying to now go to the streets and throw tantrums. You know, I'm saying it's throwing tantrums because the opportunities, the threats were there for a very long time. But somebody was not or somebody did not do their work in ensuring that if these threats are there, what are the new opportunities that we can mitigate against this threat? So in the tourism space, we are also going to find ourselves in that situation. Because in a situation where a tour guide would be speaking to people and telling them, this is, they simply now put on a gadget, and as they move around, the gadget is able to tell them that this is what happened here. Mm-hmm. So gradually, warm bodies are falling off. In the space where people used to pick up the phone, I remember I struggled booking a car. I wanted to rent a car over the phone. Every time the robot that was there was telling me, go online and make your booking. So that immediately told me that there's no person there, and they are trying to tell me that you would not get a person. Stop calling and go to the app, because they say download the app and then facilitate your booking. So it tells you that there's no longer frontline people who are now doing the job of picking up the phone and writing down your code B, driver's license, and all those things, you know. They want you to do it online. So these are also threats to the industry. How far are the threats? We are now still talking about threats. We don't know how far the damage is. And then the opportunities, we don't know how good the opportunities are there, because all of us are talking about the Fourth Industrial Revolution. Perhaps a Mayor DDG who is here is to take this to the department, and then the department must come to us and give us a brief that will tell us in this, that or a commission study to say within the tourism sector, the Fourth Industrial Revolution has presented these opportunities, but it has also presented this threat, you know. And how are we going to mitigate against the threat so that we leverage on more of the opportunities? And then my last contribution, Chair, is on the issue of the supply and demand within the tourism value chain. Well, I understand the charter is just giving us a status quo report to say within the tourism value chain, there is supply and demand of all that the industry consumes, but they are not structured, or there is no structure that is putting together all these supply and demand, products. Unlike where there's the tourism endeavor, they are showcasing the products that tourism presents, and what are the product what they actually selling, the visitor experience. But in terms of putting together a showcase that is going to be putting together the supply and the demand of the tourism value chain product is something that we need to perhaps look into, so that we as much as we talk about the tourism indaba as the African experience and showcase, we can also see what the tourism sector demands and who is supplying that demand, you know, put together. If agriculture can be able to put a showcase of tractors and people who are supplying seedlings and whatever, what stops us from the tourism sector to be able to put in together a sort of a supply endeavor, supply and demand endeavor, that would be putting together everybody under the same roof to say, we as hotels, we want to consume this, and then those that are supplying would say, we are doing this, we are doing interior deco or so on, so that we can be able to understand whether there's more demand than the supply from our own SMMEs, you know, in the same way that we are doing the finished products and selling the visitor experience. Perhaps this one is an advice from the council to say, let's look into something that would be able to put the work of, or the tourism value chain, because we are going to be talking about the tourism value chain to say there's so much potential in the tourism value chain, but unless we put all this together in a fashion that says we are able to understand that this industry consumes this, and then these are this is the supply, whether government or the business, the private sector has to support which area from the supply so that they are able to meet the demand of those that are consuming the products in the tourism sector. Thank you, Chairperson. Sorry, Chair. There's one that I just written here. It's about the network linkages between big and small business players. The Charter Council has given us a status quo to say that perhaps access to market is still a problematic, and then building networks between the bigger players and the small players that talks to the linkages of big business being able to link up with small players in townships and villages in terms of the industry. I've written this because I see that it's also a point where we are constantly going to be saying there is no link between the big players and the small players. Perhaps the big tour operators are not able to give business to the small tour operators. And unless something is done, the status quo will remain. Perhaps this one is for us, Chairperson, to say as we sit together as the portfolio committee, we must be able to say what are the blockages, because the Charter Council has given us as a challenge. Perhaps the stakeholders here who are here, Mr. Komani, who are within the who are players and front runners within the that sector, you know, make us understand why is your large tour operators who are bringing serious tours to South Africa not able to link up with a small tour operator in the township and in a village? Why are they keeping the business to themselves in a way that says you bring in people from abroad, you take them to Cape Town, and in that value chain, you are not able to share with us to say, out of this, there were few BEE companies that we were able to give them business. Because remember, you have monopolized the industry. It's going to be very difficult for a tour operator who is in a township who does tours. Because you operate in the big cities, you also want to get into Soweto and still be showing people. What stops you from when you get to Soweto, you then link up with the linkages, bring in the small tour operators who are there, who are going to share with you the routes, so that they are also able to tap into the large profits that you are making. And that is yourself as people who are managing the industry. Mr. Komani, I'll come to you on this, although it's not entirely your situation, you know. Perhaps to share with us, how do we dismantle these monopolies within this sector? Because your work is also to advise us, you know. As you are playing the advisory role to the minister, nothing stops you from advising us as the portfolio committee to be saying, perhaps policy is not certain, or there are policy gaps here and here and here. If you can tighten this, you can be able to have more role players come in. Thank you.
Yeah, it's so engaging that the members have taken a voluntary decision to forego lunch. So we'll be in the house by 2. Ne? It's now 1:15. I'm just saying I like your passion to the work. Honorable members, good. Yeah. We don't have time, Auslind. I don't know, we'll make a plan to meet next year, because we can't meet again this year to take this thing further. Maybe we'll not meet here in Parliament. But let me give you an opportunity to respond. You don't have to respond to everything. Because the general agreement is that the department, we will engage more with the department. You are just executing your mandate in line with the confines of the Act. So, and then other issues, Honorable Krambok, we will return to them. I don't know, maybe in the committee or next year, because these things that happened between pre-colonial, colonial and post-colonial, right? And how apartheid came into the picture in 1948 and how it changed the whole setup. That's the point you were making. So that's the political economy of what Honorable Krumbek was raising. So I would like us at some point to return to it, so that we can also come to the critical point he was raising. It means something else is something somewhere has not gone right in the last 25 years or so, because when he's compared to the pre-apartheid phase, when there was flourishing of enterprises, and the last 26 years of democracy. Look at the two and see if we can find convergence. The other point which I think we must return to, Honorable Krumbek raised it, I like it. It's, Chief also raised it here, supply and demand global. In my view, supply and demand globally has got curve, right? It's not only in South Africa, but that's for debate. Because when you look at the embeddedness of black people, they are in the African continent. And this embedded black people were in the African continent. A little bit of Spranglers in the U.S. and so on. They don't control the means of production globally. So it's your South African situation reflected globally. Whether we can we can change those balance of forces, which are based on supply and demand. So who are the consumers? Where do they get the resources? How those resources accrue to them? Who sells labor? Who consumes the labor, convert it into something commercial and so on? So those are deeper politics of political economy members will have to return to. And then say in the context of transformation, how do we deal with them, those particular issues? There are 9 points of what we can say is a way forward here. You will cover them if you agree with them in your response, Chairperson. But before we go there, this JSE sectors that are participating, the companies, not sectors, participating there, will also return to them. I've counted about 13, so they're not called tourism there. It's leisure and entertainment. Yeah. So we'll also return to them and look at each one of them. And then go to the category of those who are big but not at the JSE, right? And come to those that are medium, just below big. And then come to the small, and come to the emerging. I call them small and emerging, or they club together, or the germinating, and then come to the germinating, and then come to the potential where there is non-existence, but there's ideas, and as you were saying, good ideas which can be funded, and so on, so that we categorize properly, and then talk about this transformation in that context. But it's a bit of a sorry state of affairs, which the current generation will have to deal with. So the first one which I see here, Chair, is that we might have to look at the possibility. I see that you get at this matter in terms of report after 3 years or so, where you do assessment. But we might have to, between ourselves and yourselves, interact once a year, at least. And then I've spoken about the specific companies in the JSE. The third one is impact of slow and non-payment. We must include non-payment there because there are departments that don't pay at all, right? And then you go under. That one is our responsibility. We will deal with it. We will have to get from the sector specific service providers that have become casualties of this non-payment intransigence by government. And then four is threat opportunities analysis for IR, for the Industrial Revolution. And then five is the itemization and publishing of access to services being provided. Six, industrialization trajectory in tourism. This is what you are talking about, not fourth industrial, but industrialization, right? Industrialization as a broader concept. For instance, this towels you are talking about, instead of sourcing from China, we should be saying, can we establish a factory for every item that is consumed, right, in this sector. If we count all these items consumed, that total number is equivalent to potential industries. Yes, that number. That's industrialization. And we must then say, what do we do? And it will be linked also to agro-processing and so on. So as a committee, we'll talk to the other two committees, small business, talk to agriculture and land reform, and then I think it's enterprise, Department of Enterprises. Yeah, what do we call it, Chief Chair? Public enterprises. Yeah. And then seven is immediate, short, and immediate, short, medium, and long-term plan from your side. this is what Honorable Kumbi was saying. Immediately, what will be your obstacle? So if you can have a category of things that should be done, immediate, short, medium, and long term. And then the other thing, it is this inhibiting sectors that are caused by regulation regime. Because in my view, there are problems that are caused by regulations. It's not everything good. I'll make an example, including this parliament. It says that honorable members can't sleep in less than 4-star. Ne? Crazy. Now the question will be, how is parliament going to support those who are not in that category? We are the lawmakers. So we have made a law that says we'll never support you. You who are below 4-star, we'll just wave a hand at you. Right? So it's us in parliament who have developed that policy. So on our side, you can also do it voluntarily. We'll have to identify, from a research point of view, Doc, inhibiting policy regime, regulations, and all those things, because other people are just discouraged, others are stopped by this adherence to regulations. They can't penetrate at all. They can't. It's across all sectors. It's not only in agricultural sector, it's worse. If we have time, we'll just talk about the agricultural sector, how people who every morning milk their cattle in the villages cannot supply that to the market because of requirements of pasteurization and all those things, detailed, right, which are inhibiting people to sell raw milk. And we in Parliament here passed a law that said there must be health and safety, all those things that we have passed. And so, you know, when I was Premier, I used to say catering must come from a village. They must just slaughter a cow and cook, Kadi Peter said in turn, honorable members must eat. Then people who are from health and safety then came and said, can be done. But Premier, you like the idea, it's a good idea. But it's not going to happen because of there's a regulation on health and safety. But the same people over the weekend, they go to a wedding or a funeral, they are the first ones in the queue. How about somebody came, right? First ones in the queue from the graveyard. The same one. So that's the problem. And then the last one will be obstacles to what Chief Chair was saying here. Collaborations, partnerships, and JVs. What is the problem? So we'll have to then deal with that. It's now over to you, Chair. Auslindi.
Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Sorry,
I'm sorry, Chair.
Yes, Honourable. Yes, Director.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at the time. It's 1:30. And I suspect the answers won't be, you know, give it justice to what, how it should be responded to. And I'm concerned about time. May I suggest that we ask the responses be given to us in writing, and that perhaps next time when we do interact, we can then expand on that. Because I'm looking at the time. We've got to be in the House in the next 20 minutes, and I don't think it would be fair to expect proper responses at such little time. So I'd just like to make that suggestion.
Yeah, that's fine. But I think it will be fair to at least give you an opportunity for having come all the way. I mean, you left your private jobs. You make a lot of money, but you prioritize coming to the committee, right? That's commitment to the people of South Africa. So at least we must give you an opportunity to wrap up. We agree with you, Honorable De Freitas. So we are giving the Chair, Auslindi, to wrap up. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you very much to the Honourable Members. I'm mindful of time, as that has been raised by the Honourable Member, because we also have to start rushing towards the airport. There were so many important reflections in part that one wants to agree with and say that I think we're all facing in the same direction as yourself. I don't feel any antagonism between the comments that came from the Honourable Members and what was presented. If anything, I feel a great empathy towards what work is set out ahead of us. I think what's important is that we must be honest and truthful to each other about the status quo and what the challenge is. I liked what Honorable Makubele Mashele said, in us also being mindful of what our mandate is. And even ourselves, we sometimes get, because of our passion and because of our desire to see change, we also sometimes begin delving into areas which are really not our space when we look at the clean, clear-cut mandate of monitoring, evaluation, reporting, compliance. But I think it goes without saying that it's really about addressing our networks, making sure that the individuals who sit on this council and beyond utilize every single network. I mean, our Minister Kubangbani, always says, use me. Tell me where you want me to be in terms of the voice. So in response to Honorable Galo and Ego, I think the points that were made about the council's independence actually got me aback, but I want to hone in on what was said with your permission, Honorable Chair, that it is something that we probably have not reflected on in terms of the funding and therefore the total independence of the council. And I think what I heard was that if the private sector becomes the funder of this body, the likelihood of it not transforming as robustly, as aggressively, and as quickly as I heard from all the members is likely to be compromised. We haven't thought of that. It was actually something I'm looking at my colleagues and saying, wow, I think we actually need to pause and maybe even on our written response to you to say, maybe that's something we need to continue discussing. How do we make sure that this body is funded in such a way that it is truly independent and that no private sector or government can say, but we are the ones who are funding? How do we make sure that it is seen as being really, really independent? So I wanted to hone in on that because I thought it was an important point. I do think that there were quite a lot of questions that my deputy chair and Mr. Komani could assist me in just quickly wrapping up. But one of the other things that I wanted to respond to is that when we do put our plan of action together, we are certainly going to take many of the points that were brought up today to make sure that our plan of action addresses them. Even in our written response to yourself, we will indicate. I mean, when we talk about what are we doing immediately, we are currently in the process of planning. We are currently in the process of the independence, which is why the conversation of how the funding should take place is an important one. And we are in the process of setting up subcommittees. I think a lot of the work of the subcommittees can actually be guided by the conversation that we've had here today. So that really, really, when we come back and report to you in person again in a year, and in between that in writing and in other communication platforms, we will be responding directly to what it was that you spoke to about. So short and long to medium term, medium to long term, sorry, would then have to be aspects that we've been presenting to you, but also that you've raised with us. Very quickly, there was a question on the empowering, we talked about the empowering supplier. I think it was Honorable Member Sitole who was asking about, just because it's technical, I wanted to quickly respond to it. And he was asking about the participation of South Africans vis-a-vis non-South Africans. I think without being xenophobic, our codes are very clear that 85% of a workforce must be South African, and 50% of that 85% must be black African. So, I mean, that is a clear case. So if there is an issue of, when we come back to our issue of compliance and lack of compliance, the question would be to ask, therefore, what is the consequence when we discover these situations that have been reported to us? We don't have the answer, but it's something that keeps coming back to us, and it is a discussion that is on the table. Can I ask my Deputy Chair, Jerima Benner, to please assist Deputy Chair with some of a very quick oversight of some of the questions that came up? particularly from Mekumba.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Honourable Members. I'm going to ask also Ndate Komane to help me as I go through some of these. I think there were a couple of questions, Honourable Members, that came up.
But the group will remember that you will send written.
This is just a highlight.
Initial pie.
Indeed,
highlight.
Yes.
Okay.
I think the first one was an issue of technology and enablement, whether it enables or disables the tourism sector, Chair. There is a project that is outside of the sector charter, and perhaps in the written submission, we will elaborate a bit further on that project.
Okay.
And if there is an opportunity to come and present to the portfolio committee, we would welcome that opportunity, because it is quite transformational from a South African travel and tourism's point of view, and the enabling environment for SMMEs in particular to begin to participate meaningfully in that space is quite a big thing that we may want to share. I would like to then comment, because if I do, then I'm going to get into the specifics, which is not the intention.
Thank you, Chair. I think what I'll suggest, I will invite this committee to talk to the likes of TOFES. I think the Honourable Member there mentioned about what synergies do exist between big businesses and small businesses. You know, I'll give you one practical example. You know, we talk about non-payment. What we have done as TOFES, we have created what is called virtual credit card. We take the risk from the government, but our small businesses are not affected, because when Jerry checks in a BNB, the payment is done immediately. But TOFES' role is to make sure that the government pays. We take the risk, but not the small businesses. So there are several innovative things that businesses are doing. And you talk about tours. You know, some of the tours that we do, we don't even get to the place. We outsource that to someone who has local knowledge. But I think this committee has the ability to call the businesses here to say, account, what have you done, or visit them when you're in Joburg. We're more than happy to do that. And I think the collaboration between public sector and private sector can help a lot in bridging that gap of understanding between private sector and public sector.
Thank you, Blackie. And us, Murongwe, our DDG from the National Department of Tourism, I think also really yours is a commitment of what can be done from the department going forward.
Thank you, Chair. I think what came out from Honourable Makuvele Mashele and the Chair is in terms of those threats and opportunities analysis in terms of the 4IR. I know the department was going to come up with an innovation conference down the line, and I think in that space, we will be able to really go into identifying those threats as well as the opportunities. The other area was on the participation of, actually, which is the core of blacks, but in terms of ensuring that within our provinces and local governments they do, that was coming from Honorable Mieni, in terms of visibility. From the department side of things, we do have what we call the learning networks, where we have partnered with SALGA to really bring on board the officials from municipalities in terms of what really tourism is. So we're saying into that very space, because as we're doing the alignment in terms of the codes, we found that participation is very poor, but at the same time, understanding of those who have come, who would have come to the alignment sessions really don't have an understanding of what the codes are all about. So it's a platform that the members of this charter council can also piggyback on, so that we are able to give the information. And at the same time, that visibility in terms of what this charter council is doing will be very key.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm mindful of time, and I'm respectful to the request from the Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee for us to respond back in writing. We took extensive notes, and I do believe that coming back in writing will actually be also a commitment. You know, when something is in writing, then you also now know that council members have committed in what our responses are, so that they can be carefully considered. Honorable Kambrick has left, but I mean, he really made us get into reflective mode and think, as many of you did. So we must be careful also when we respond. May I take this opportunity to thank you very much, our Honorable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you so much for giving us this opportunity. While it was a difficult discussion, sometimes emotional, and sometimes discouraging, I think we will leave here hopeful. Hopeful because of the support that we see from yourselves and the same passion in your responses that was displayed tells us that we really have good support. I have no doubt that even before we come back to you, you will have already had your discussions and begin disseminating some of the discussions on the other platforms and other committees that can assist in the objectives and reaching the objectives of our mandate. We will make sure that everything that we talk about is time-bound. I still like your reporting war cry of September to September, or at least every year, where we can come and tell you what it is that we said we were going to do and what is what we have done. There were many comments about making sure that what is on paper is actually work in action. And really, as I say, utilizing our networks, making sure that every single stakeholder is playing their part is really what will be the success of this council. The council, as you can see, is not a huge council, and we are individuals who are working, but in our commitment and our national service to our country, we stay committed to making sure that at whatever opportunity we have, whenever we can, that we are really speaking to transformation and fast-tracking the objectives of transformation. So thank you very much to all the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Hello, Haruna Uslindi. And we want to thank you for the commitment you have demonstrated. Now, there's a quote here that says, people are not usually fond of change and tend to fight those who call for it, because it requires them to change their habits. This is from a book, Flashes of Thought. Flashes of Thought, Yaha Mr. Khalifa. Bin Zayed, Wako UAE. United Arab Emirates. So this change is going to happen. There's going to be some problems along the way, but it's going to happen. And Oraro Motega is not here from the EFF. The problem we have had in South Africa is the resistance, and co-option. In my view, it's resistance, co-option, and indecisiveness. We can debate that one day. That's why we have not moved as much as we were supposed to move. But it was to be expected. So I want to thank you very much. September to September. So September is our culmination tourism month on what you have done on transformation. I'm sure at the beginning of the month we will do that to tell South Africa the view of the Committee on Transformation. 12 months. So we'll be doing that. We are doing, Auslindi, what we call reciprocative oversight model. So we are not antagonistic as a committee. That's what we have adopted as the sixth administration, the reciprocative oversight approach. So let's mention, go well, and we'll see if we can in between introduce some bilaterals on a subsector basis. I think it will also be helpful if we can do that. Mudima Zamayelona, a safe trip back home. Yes. Hamanigash. Tossies. Whatever they say so in the SAA. Hamanigash. Tossies. Honorable members, we have got two items to deal with. I know you are very progressive collective, as our council is moving out. we assume or we move from the premise that honorable members have not only perused the HOIC report, but they have read and internalized it, and that if there were any fundamental issues relating to that report, we would have received written inputs as agreed during the meeting of 10 trunks. So, I take it that...
10 trunks.
Yes, the meeting of 10 trunks. So, do we take it as right and adopt it, honorable members? Hoi?
Agreed.
Agreed?
Yes.
Sure.
Seconded.
We have honorable Galo moving.
And
the seconder
Komba?
Is honorable Komba. Komba. And the minutes? Who is the mover? Honorable Peter. And honorable Galo and Vieni are the seconders, and we don't have any fundamentalist who is opposed to the adoption of the minutes. Thanks for your endurance, honorable members. Withdraw what now?
Hold report at least and report and adopt.
Yes.
We have. Yes. Can't think
yes. So, honorable members, this now brings us to the cordial end of this meeting. Next week is greeting cancer. Yeah, we will have the chief chair now replacing honorable Peter.
Oh, I didn't hear.
Can you move for the minute? For adoption of the minute? Okay, honorable Vienna has moved. Yeah. And then Mama Tabo is the second.
And the third?
Yes. All right. Thank you.